Blog Talk Radio.
I am dominating at my fingertips.
And you're listening to Hell in a Cell Radio.
The Hell in a Cell Talk Radio.
Hell in a Cell Radio.
Hell in a Cell Talk Radio.
Hell in a Cell Talk Radio.
Ladies and gentlemen,
welcome to Hell in a Cell Talk Radio. It is, of course, another episode, and I am your host, the Dean of Credibility, Double D. You can find me at Folsom County. And you know what? Dan, just to answer your question, and I know you hate when I do this, but your question is, what is he at his fingertips? It's salivating, Dan.
Ah, okay.
Salivating fingertips.
That part is always kind of,
Salivating.
Thank you.
But anyway, we're on for another episode. We have coming up in just about 15 to 20 minutes, we'll have Damon Jackson here. He is from Legacy Fights and Bellator. An exciting interview there. Also, coming up about an hour from now, 60 minutes into the program, we are going to have the Zebra Prince, Joey Janela, joining us. And the biggest question I have for him is, why target Matt Tremont? Not smart.
No,
but we're gonna find out more about that, and we're also going to be talking about UFC 167. That is going to be about 80 minutes into the program. We'll be talking about UFC 167. Right now, I'd like to introduce my co-host. He is also the host of Obey Puck Show. You can find that at Twitter. It is Dan the Man Colachico, the above-average comedian.
And I'm dating the angry spatula.
Yes, you are, Dan.
Oh, it was the greatest thing I've ever heard. I told her, you're the angry spatula now. You follow me alone on Twitter at DanLawD3, but like Dean said, follow the show at Obey Puck Show every Monday nights right here on the Hell in a Cell Talk Radio Network.
That's right. And also, to my left, it is our MMA and wrestling analyst. It is Omega Squad, Chris Green. How are you tonight, sir?
I am doing fantastic, folks.
Now, you had more. I'm sorry.
Well, I was going to say, follow me on Twitter at Omega Squad, or ignore me on at Omega Squad. Either way,
complete
works.
Indifference, sir.
Had my favorite tweet of the day this morning.
Oh, yeah.
I missed it. What was it? I was ignoring him.
You're ignoring Omega Squad? Go ahead, tell him, Chris.
I was plugging the show, so I said tonight, outrage, something, Armageddon, something like that. And that's just Dan Law's morning. Wait till we talk about UFC 167.
That's true.
Oh, it was perfect. It was a perfect, I was like, yeah, that's good.
That is true. That is just Dan's, before he has his cup of coffee in the morning, but we're not going to talk about that right now. What I want to talk about, Omega, is, of course, 167. We have to talk about George St. Pierre. Now, I was not impressed with his performance. However, two judges were impressed enough to give him the rounds. I scored it, obviously, for the challenger, Johnny Hendricks. I scored that. It all comes down to the first round. Is basically where it comes from. If you look at the scorecard, it comes down to that very first round. Everybody agrees that the second and fourth round, second and third, I believe it is, were Hendricks, and the last two rounds were GSP or something like that, whatever it is. But it's that first round that's very pivotal. How do you see it, Omega? In your eyes, I think you were, at the time at least, like everyone else, except for Dave Meltzer. For some reason.
Yeah, at the time I was firmly in the Hendricks camp, thinking, like most people, that Hendricks won rounds 1, 2, and 4.
It was 1, 2, and 4.
And when the decision was announced, I was flabbergasted that GSP retained his title. Particularly after the beating he took, his face was pretty really messed up. But I went back the other day and I rewatched the first round, and it was much closer than I remembered it. If I sat back and looked at it objectively, without the context of the other four rounds, without the context of is GSP going to get beat, I thought it was actually much closer than I thought, and
I could
see the argument for giving it to GSP. I see it. I don't necessarily believe it. I still score the round for Hendrix.
Yes, that's exactly what I was going to say. I went back as well, rewatched this, and obviously when controversy like this happens, you go back. So this, is, I think, in a way kind of helps UFC, but that's neither here nor there. But you go back, you look, and you go, okay, I score this for Hendrix. All GSP really did in that round was get the takedown within 10 seconds, and I was like, oh, my God, this is going to be like a GSP fight. Yes. But he got the takedown. That's the submission. The actual submission, Omega, was not the standing Kimura he was trying later. The submission that they scored for him was that guillotine that led to nothing.
Well, I'm not sure it was actually just the submission. I think, you know, when he was clinching up against the cage for a good long time and had Hendrix controlled for a substantial part of that round, it depends on how you weight, you know. We talked about the unified rules before. How much weight do you give cage control? How much weight do you give effective striking, effective grappling? You know, I think this was where it could be argued was that GSP controlled more of the round. I mean, with the takedown and with
but the Johnny got one right back.
I agree with that. I mean, and that's why I scored. Ultimately, why I scored it for Hendrix was even in that clinch up against the cage, he was the one landing elbows and punches.
Oh,
on GSP,
yeah, hellish elbows.
You know, so even if it's defensive striking, it's effective striking because, you know, that guy has, you know, nuclear bombs in his fists. Those are heavy, heavy hands. Those do damage, as evidenced by GSP's face by the end of the round.
Yeah.
Even at the end of the first round, he had a cut in his face. So Hendrix was doing damage. You know, it was just, how do you score that first round? And obviously, two of the judges scored it more that, that GSP controlled the cage.
Let's talk about the judges for a second here. The judges are Sal D'Amato, which is, he's a real estate agent in the greater Las Vegas area. That's what he does. Does he know anything about fighting? No, but he's a judge for the Las Vegas, for the Nevada State Athletic Commission. Let's talk about the other guy, Tony Weeks. He's a boxing judge.
Yeah. Well, there's a lot, especially with Vegas Commission, there's a lot of judging that comes from old boxing judges. I won't pretend to know what Sal D'Amato's fighting credentials are, because I don't know and I haven't researched it. But
I don't know either. I'm gonna throw accusations.
Why not? Groundless accusations always work.
In my opinion, he's a boob. There.
Does being a boxing judge matter?
Being a boxing official judge, I think, does, because MMA is there's so many different areas. If he's looking just for a stand-up round, maybe a clinch against the cage, like Omega said, was enough in his eyes, and apparently it was enough.
Well,
in his eyes.
The question is always, do the boxing judges truly appreciate what goes on in mixed martial arts, especially with the ground game?
Oh, yeah.
You know, do they understand what's happening when they go to the ground, when the Brazilian jiu-jitsu is going on, when they're trying for submissions, when they're fighting for top position, going for sweeps, defending especially? When you think about boxing, defense is just putting your hands up and not getting in and putting your hands in front of the punch. In MMA, it could be a bunch of different things you're doing to be effectively defend yourself. And how much weight do they give them? My concern is that boxing judges don't, as Dean was saying, color their judging decisions based on stand up more than the effectiveness of a ground game, and they really weight control of the cage more than they really should.
Yeah, I think that as well. Now, of course, after the fight, GSP had some strange things to say, and this is yet another champion this year that had strange things to say. We're going to listen to this, and we'll be right back.
I'm here with the winner and still champion, George St. Pierre. First of all, George, an amazing fight. An outstanding challenger. One of the most difficult fights of your career. Give me your thoughts on the fight.
Hi, without a doubt, my toughest fight. And, wow, I lost memory a little bit in the fight. Imagine how tough it was. I couldn't see with one of my eyes. You really messed me up. I need vacation right now.
Were you surprised when the decision was read?
No, I wasn't surprised, but like I said, I lost a little bit memory of what happened. I got caught a couple of times. I want to give my hands up to Johnny Hendricks, my toughest opponent so far. And thank you everyone for coming, all my supporters that are here.
What was the game plan going into this fight, and what, if anything, surprised you about Hendricks?
Well, he was very good at countering my game plan. My game plan was to make him fight going backward, make him fight on his toes because he's a very powerful puncher, I can tell you. And he closed my eyes with one of his strikes, so I couldn't see with my right eyes. He hit very hard.
Well, George, congratulations on defending your title, and congratulations on being an excellent representative of mixed martial arts. You're a true champion. What were you going to say?
Listen, everyone, it was a lot of talk about what's going to happen. I have a bunch of stuff in my life happening. I need to hang up my glove for a little bit, at least. Make a point on my life, and hope my fan appreciate. Thank you to everyone, the UFC, Johnny Hendricks, and man,
are you retiring right now? Is that what you're saying?
I have to go away for a little bit at least, and I want to have personal things happening, and I want to say thank you from the bottom of my heart to the UFC who gave me the chance, everyone, for the support. Thank you very much.
So what you're saying is you have personal things outside of fighting that you have to tend to? Is this the end?
I have to step away for a bit, and that's all I can say right now. I just got punched a little bit and everything. But later on, I'll make a point on that. Right now, I got to go away for a little bit, and I want to say thank you to all my supporters, the UFC, that give me the chance, and Johnny Hendricks, and... Yeah, I'm very emotional right now, but...
Well, George, rest up from a tough fight, and I can't wait to hear how this develops, and if you decide to return, it'll be an honor to watch you fight again. And it's been an honor to call your fight. Thank you, sir.
Honor was mine. Thank you very much.
George Rush St. Pierre, the winningest fighter in UFC history.
Now, of course, you have Goldberg there putting the... spin on it that he's the winningest fighter. But the whole thing to me is, as I'm watching this, I'm like, what a dick. Here's this guy, he just got beat up for 5 rounds. He somehow holds on to the title, and then he's like, hey, I'm going away. I got a lot going on. Dana White was not happy with this.
What's wrong with the word hiatus? First of all,
in USB, there's a big problem with that.
I doubt he understands the word hiatus.
I'm going away for a little. You're going on hiatus, dude. I'm not going to retire.
Let's give him credit. He just had a 5-round war. He was hit in the head several times during that time period.
And he's Canadian.
French Canadian. So it's, you know, he didn't probably, when he was addled, he had a really rough fight, he was tired, probably didn't know what he was saying. You know, let's give him the benefit of the doubt that he did have some issues. And you know, after the fight where he's talked about having issues, there's been some allegations that come out.
Baby daddy,
potentially, his former manager suing him for millions of dollars.
There's a lot going on.
His father dying, which may have been erroneous.
What?
Let's face it, this is TMZ reporting this, so you know, let's...
What did he call and say, I can't make it, my dad was dead, it was fake?
No, but the... But
the report may have been
The report was... What GSP is saying that he has personal issues to deal with, and he has to come, and he has to try to take... He has to take a break, at least, to deal with his personal issues.
Gotcha.
It came out on Monday that his personal issues... This was TMZ reported that it was... He had fathered a child on a woman, and he wanted her to have an abortion. She didn't want to. And also, his father was very ill. And I guess his sister came out later that day and said, no, my dad's fine. So
okay.
Take a huge grain of salt with the rest of TMZ's report. But what is true is there is a lawsuit against him from his former manager that is for several millions of dollars.
I'm not impressed by your performance.
Yeah.
Well, I was reading up on it, you know, on the results and everything, and it seemed I was agreeing with Dean that he was being really dickish in his little, you know, thank you, and I'm leaving now. I'm taking my ball, and I'm going to go.
That was my impression, because I don't like the guy much anyway, Omega.
Yeah, well, I mean...
And I just take Dean's side on there.
But let's. I understand that feeling from a fan's perspective. I had kind of that visceral reaction when he was talking at the same time too.
Right,
really, you're not going to give Hendricks the rematch after he just beat you potentially, at least in the eyes of 75% of the fans.
At least stay until you lose, you bugger.
But this isn't baseball. This isn't, this isn't bowling. You can't force a guy to get into the cage and take shots to the head if he doesn't feel it.
If you're the champion, you have a certain – am I wrong?
You and Dana White would get along well with that theory. I'm kind of in the middle on it, but
owe us a damn thing. He doesn't owe anyone a damn thing, really.
I think he owes the UFC a little bit, but that's we'll talk about this a little bit later because our guest is here. But before we get to our guest, I do want to ask the question, what do you do if he doesn't come back for some time? Now, I hate interim titles. I say you just strip him, have a eliminator for the fight, for the welterweight title. And you throw two hot guys, obviously Hendricks and Lawler. Your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I mean, I don't really want to go down the interim route again with the welterweight division. But I think you got to give GSP at least the benefit of some time to decide what he wants to do.
Well, sure. I mean, most times Dana doesn't even talk to people until for at least 2 weeks out.
In the interim, Hendricks has a knee injury that he's going to have to heal up. He's suspended for 6 months unless he gets doctor's clearance. So
that's
who knows
true.
How long that's going to take. So then you sit there and you say, okay, Lawler's up. Then next month we have Carlos Condit versus Matt Brown. I say you have the next fight out there. Maybe in 3 months you put the winner of that fight against Lawler, and then if GSP is not coming back, you put Hendricks versus the winner of that fight.
Why not just a fatal four-way?
Why not?
I'm kidding, obviously. But our guest is here, as I said, Damon the Leech Jackson is here, and we are ready to talk with him, and we'll get right to him after I moved the music. See, this is what happens sometimes. There, I found it. But he'll be on right after this.
Thank you.
MMA fighter out of Texas. He has fought for Legacy Fighting as well as Bellator. It is Damon the Leech Jackson. How are you doing tonight, sir?
Doing good. How are you doing?
Doing great here as well. You're also here with Dan and Chris. And I just wanted to start out now. You have a very unique nickname. You are known as the Leech. Now, where did that come from? I think I have an idea, but I just want to hear it from you.
It actually came from my wrestling background. Most of my wrestling, my best wrestling was done whenever I was on top. So a lot of people, they started calling me there, saying like, Damon, you're just like a leech, staying on everybody's back and everything. So it kind of just stuck with me since high school.
Well, there you go. I thought it was because of those six submission skills that I've seen you display during your MMA career. But let's go back a little ways. Let's go back. How did you get started in MMA? What turned you on to it?
The Ultimate Fighter was a big turn on, and then when Forrest Griffin and Stephen Bonner and Kenny Florey, and whenever they are all starting out, I was watching the Ultimate Fighter a lot and wanted to get into it. And there was actually a gym that opened up in my hometown, and I started going in there and showing them wrestling and just learning a little bit of jiu-jitsu every time I go in there, and just slowly kind of started working into it, working some jiu-jitsu and boxing, and then went off to college, and some of the guys on my team were fighting, so that's where I got started, actually training for MMA was in college.
Now, being a wrestler, having that wrestling background, what was the hardest thing for you to learn as you started your MMA career?
Not to be so aggressive all the time, because in wrestling, it's always if you're not moving, then you're not then you're not winning. If you're not if you don't have a dominant position, then you're not winning. So I think a lot of it was being over aggressive coming in from my wrestling, always feeling like I had control. When really I didn't have control, and working a lot off my back, because I never really feel comfortable on my back, and even in MMA I still don't feel comfortable on it. But just learning that the transitions from wrestling into jiu-jitsu was it's really hard for me, but I'm picking up on it a lot, and feeling pretty good right now.
Yeah, I can see that. Now, when you started your amateur career, how did it feel to get in the cage for the first time? Were you nervous? Were you excited? How did you feel going into that first fight?
Yeah, my first fight, that was like in 08. I had my first amateur fight, and I fought at 170. I walked around like 172, something like that. So I didn't cut any weight or anything. Didn't really prepare for it as far as like training jiu-jitsu or, boxing or anything. I just did a lot of wrestling going up into it, and so when I went into the fight, I had no clue what to expect, honestly, and I just I went in there, and the kid threw a punch, and I just panicked and took him down, and then once I took him down, went into what little jiu-jitsu I knew at the time, and ended up finishing him in the first round with the rear neck and choke, and, but had no clue what I was going on, so I was nervous, and but I was addicted to it after that night, so...
Yeah, and your wrestling background obviously plays into that, because I'm looking at your amateur record, and you've won all your fights by submission at the amateur level. I mean, so did you pick – was Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu something you picked up, like, really fast?
No, I mean, I didn't really ever train. Like, I didn't start training Jiu-Jitsu by itself until I got out of college, because, all my wrestling coaches didn't like the fact that Jiu-Jitsu, a lot of it goes to your back. And so they didn't like that style of, grappling. So a lot of them didn't even let us train jiu-jitsu. And, I was really focused on my wrestling career at the time, so I didn't really train a lot in jiu-jitsu or even on my stand-up at all, really. And, the little jiu-jitsu I knew was from watching it and just, messing around with my buddies at wrestling practice. And, all my amateur fights were with really, very little training. And, after I got out of school and I moved down to Dallas, now I started getting myself to where I'm more well-rounded with my jiu-jitsu and with my striking. So, all my amateur fights were, very little jiu-jitsu training.
It looked like you had, great success in your amateur career, but what I found interesting looking at your record is you went pro after you lost at the amateur level. What, talk about that last fight at the amateur, and what made you decide to go pro after that point?
Well, the reason I lost that last amateur fight, like, I was really dominant in the first round, and you know, really took the kid down and controlled him the whole time, and came out in the second, did the exact same thing, and then he caught me with like a dog choke, I believe, and you know, I had no clue, I had no defense to it, I didn't know, you know, any jiu-jitsu really, I hadn't been training with the right people, and you know, I wanted to go pro, but then after losing that fight, you know, I knew that I had to change some stuff up, so I started, you know, training mainly just jiu-jitsu for the first, like, 3 or 4 months, and then I started going into, like, Muay Thai and kickboxing as well, but, yeah, just coming out of that last amateur fight was just very little training, and, you know, I wasn't doing things right, and, you know, now, obviously, you know, things are going a lot better for me. I'm training with, you know, some of the best guys in the world in jiu-jitsu. And, you know, it just really helps out a lot to know the difference. You know, your wrestling technique going into the jiu-jitsu technique is just totally different, you know, completely different sport. So just before my amateur career, I thought my wrestling would carry me through. And, obviously, you can't just have one. You know, you can't just have wrestling or, you know, any other thing, so...
Now, did you change camps right after that fight, or is that something that came along after? Or
yeah,
did you not
no,
change camps?
Yeah, see, in my last amateur fight, I didn't even have a camp or anything. Like, I literally trained in my college wrestling room for every single amateur fight. And, yeah, that's something that whenever I got out, I knew that I had to find a gym. That at the time, I was so focused on my wrestling that I didn't really, you know, put a lot into MMA. And, you know, I just basically did this in the off season whenever, you know, I didn't have anything going on. You know, I wanted to stay busy doing something competitive. And so once I got out of school, I stayed up in Missouri for a little while, up in Springfield, and trained up there for a little while. And took my first three pro fights up in Missouri, and then ended up moving down to Dallas after I trained at Octagon, you know, like 7 months ago. I trained there for the first time, and you know, I've been there ever since. And they've just changed my game up so much. It's helped me out with everything. You know, even my wrestling has gotten better, you know, just training at the gym. So, you know, my strongest point was wrestling, and it's, you know, it's becoming, you know, my love again. Like, I'm falling back in love with wrestling and the grappling part of it, not just – always want to get better on my feet. You know, I'm not really worried about it anymore. Just, you know, learning new things every day. So.
Yeah, so let's go back to you made the decision to go pro, and your first fight was against Jacob Salyer. I saw that fight. You really smothered that guy right off the top on the way to a quick TKO victory. How did you feel going into that fight? Did you know anything about the guy, and did you have any jitters being that it was your first professional fight?
Yeah, you know, always, you know, the first, you know, your first, like, 10 fights are the most important fights in your career, because that's, you know, establishes what, you know, promotion you're going to fight for, really. You know, if you have a bad record, obviously you're not going to be fighting for the UFC or for whoever. So, you know, those first couple of fights are always very important. And, yeah, going into that first fight, you know, I didn't even know the kid. I never – didn't know his name or anything. And there was very little video on him. I just saw that he had some pretty good jiu-jitsu. And that's what I had been working on. And that was, you know, my strong point was my grappling. So, you know, honestly, I wasn't, like, too worried about it. I was just more worried about my, you know, the win and loss of it instead of, you know, the opponent himself, because you know, I knew that I could most likely out grapple him, or at least out wrestling, you know, getting to the ground and start working from there. And then once we got in the cage, it just kind of took over all the training that I had done before. So
I'm looking at your record here. You fought Zach Church in your third fight, professional fight, for King of the Cage. Then you got the call to Bellator, and it's a rematch with Zach Church. What was that like, first of all, getting the call to Bellator? Obviously, it's a big move up from where you were. What's that like, your fourth professional fight, you're with Bellator?
I didn't have a manager at the time, and, you know, I hadn't really talked to anybody about my career and, like, as far as where I wanted to go with it. And, you know, I had that fight with Zach Church with King of the Cage, which is, I thought at the time was a decent promotion. And, you know, we fought, I don't even remember, I think we fought in, like, December, and then as soon as the fight was over, we had a decent fight, but I out-wrestled him the first fight and then submitted, ended up submitting him in the second. And then going into that second fight, I randomly got a call from Zach Light, who works for Bellator. He's one of their matchmakers, just called me, and he asked me to fight somebody at 170, which I told him, you know, that was more than what I wanted to fight at. And I told him I would fight at lightweight or at 45. And he ended up calling me back the next day and said, would you want to rematch with Zach Church? And basically just told me all the stipulations within everything. So I was, you know, I had just beat him, so, you know, I couldn't return that fight down just because it was my fourth professional fight, and it was with Bellator. So, you know, it was a good matchup for me. So I just got the phone call, and that's how that whole fight started. So,
what was it like stepping in from, you know, smaller regional promotions into a national stage, really, with Bellator? What was that feeling? Did you get the jitters all over again, or was it just another day in the office, so to say?
No, yeah, it was definitely nerve-wracking. Just going into that, and, you know, I didn't really know what to expect with Bellator because I saw their tournament setting, and, you know, I really liked it and everything. I liked it. They always had fights going on and everything. And just going from where I was at that time to fighting in Bellator was just, it was surreal. Like, it was crazy just to see the difference of, you know, how people treat you. You know, they don't, Bellator treated me a lot better than the other promotions I had fought for in the past. And, you know, it was awesome, honestly, fighting for them. You know, now I'm looking at Legacy, and it's, you know, I just had my last fight with Legacy, and it was, you know, it was awesome. You know, Mick Maynard is a good guy, and that whole promotion, just, you know, it's a great promotion. So I'm going to stick with Legacy from here on out, and hopefully, you know, make my way up to UFC. But, yeah, coming from King of the Cage and then fighting the Bellator, that was awesome. And, you know, it's all only going up from here, so.
So if I hear you right, you don't want to go back to Bellator, or do you want to do Legacy and Bellator?
No, I definitely want to stick with Legacy. You know, I'm hoping to get that title shot after Leonard Garcia and Kevin Aguilar fight. I'm hoping, you know, I get that call to fight for the championship or for that belt. So, you know, that's my goal right now, is to, you know, make my way up through Legacy and hopefully fight for that belt in sometime early next year. So we'll see how it goes.
Okay, so you got your eyes on the prize there in Legacy. What was it like? Mick Maynard made the call, I suppose, reaches out to you. He says he wants you in Legacy, and you fought at Legacy 24. We'll talk about the fight in a second, but just did you know anything about Legacy going into it? You're from Texas, so I suppose in Texas it's a much bigger promotion than it is. We're on the East Coast, so I guess it's a bit of a difference being in Texas. But what was that like, getting the call to Legacy?
Yeah, it's just a good, you can just tell they're just good people, like, you know, just good, solid people. Getting a phone call from them, we have a lot of guys fighting in the Legacy series, and it's just, the way I saw the other fighters being treated and the way that I've been treated in the past, you know, it makes more sense to fight for somebody that you like than, you know, to go out there and put a show on for somebody that doesn't respect, you know, give you the respect you need. And, you know, just Legacy, they're just, you know, good people and just treat everybody right. And that's just the way I feel like it should be. So, you know, Legacy, it's a strong promotion, and it's, you know, getting bigger every day. And hopefully, you know, someday they'll you know, branch off and not just be a Texas promotion only. But, you know, they do have the Access TV, so it's, you know, live televised every time they fight. And, you know, it's something that I looked at whenever I was an amateur. Had flipped it over to Access TV and saw him on there, and just ever since then I kept up with him. And so when I got the call, you know, I was definitely glad to hear that it was Nick on the phone and asking me to fight for them. So.
Now let's go back to that last fight you had at Legacy 24. Did you want to secure the submission? Because it certainly looked like, now I'm not a fighter, I don't train or anything, but it looked like to me, just as a casual observer, that you really were going after that submission. That was your game plan.
Oh, yeah, definitely. I mean, I'll go any finish I can get, you know, I'm going for it. I'm not going to give somebody, like, a chance to come back and catch me off guard. You know, like, he caught me with a kick, and I could have I should have finished it in the first. I should have finished it early in the second, and then he ended up escaping and, you know, getting back to his feet and almost knocked me out, you know. So that's just something that you can't give up on a submission, or you can't pass on something just because you want to put on a show. So going into that fight, I definitely wanted to get to the ground as soon as I could. And I had his back in the first and almost secured that Runica choke a few times that we were fighting back and forth with the hands. And, you know, I honestly just couldn't get my hands locked to finish the Runica choke, but I was definitely going for a submission 100%. And especially with Rez Nation giving out that $1,000 finish bonus, you know, I had to go for something big. You know, I wanted to definitely get that finish. So, yeah, I was definitely going for it, though.
You know, that's interesting. You brought up the finish bonus that they have for Legacy. Is that really something that you guys in the back really are shooting for? That's something that is really an incentive for you guys?
Oh, definitely. I mean, you know, what you get paid in your, starting off in your career, you know, fighting, honestly, you know, doesn't pay bills until you're, you know, fighting for, you know, big numbers, which those numbers don't come along until you're, you know, you have a, you know, like an 8-12-0 record. You're not going to be getting paid anything leading up to that. So, you know, for what we put into, like, the hours that we put into the gym, you know, the time, the money that you spend, you know, just on your career, you know, any little bonus like that is definitely going to help somebody, you know, push a little harder, you know, or it does for myself. You know, I really, anytime I can get a chance to make a bonus, I'll definitely, you know, fight a little harder for it. So yeah, I think it definitely helps.
Now, you've started your pro career. You're 7-0 at this point. Just step back and assess your career. How do you feel about what you've done so far, and what do you need to get to the next stage of your career? What do you need to work on?
Well, definitely coming from a wrestling background, obviously I haven't spent as much time on my stand-up, so, like, going into the future, I'll be definitely improving my stand-up, or at least my stand-up defense. But as far as my career is starting off, it's been, you know, really busy this past year. You know, I've put in almost 7 fights this year, and I wanted to do that just to establish myself as, you know, as a professional fighter and get my name out there as quick as possible, and, you know, just so I can hurry up and get those steps going to where, you know, because I'm not going to fight forever. You know, I want to fight for, you know, 3 to 5 years max and just be done with it. So I want to be happy when I get to the end of it, and you know, my career has been very busy, and I'm ready to fight at all times. You know, I'm training every day, learning jiu-jitsu, you know, whatever it is, jiu-jitsu, stand-up, whatever I'm working on, I'm learning something new every day. And, so just, you know, I'm ready to fight at any time. So I'm going to keep it a steady career for the next 3 years and then call it quits and, you know, see where it goes. So.
And so, interestingly, you said that you only want to fight 3 to 5 years. Why is that?
Because, you know, I have a family. I have 2 little girls right now. I have a 4-year-old girl and a 2-year-old girl. So, you know, this isn't something I want them seeing me doing or, you know, seeing. I don't want them, you know, knowing a whole lot about it. Because as of right now, they still think it's just wrestling. You know, they haven't. They saw my last fight on TV, which was a lot of grappling. So I wasn't too worried about them seeing it. You know, I just don't want them. You know, honestly, being around it, I'd rather them, you know, not know a whole much about it. And, you know, it's just a way for me to compete. And it, I don't know, I'm addicted to it, so it's kind of hard to turn it down right now. But I just know that a body's not going to last forever, so I want to take advantage of it now, at least for these next 3 years, so I know I'm, you know, young and healthy enough to do it. And then after that, I just want to, you know, live my life and put all my focus in on my family and, you know, just be happy with my career, hopefully. So.
Well, coming from an amateur wrestling background, is there much of a difference with your conditioning for an amateur wrestling match and an MMA fight?
Oh, yeah. Well, as far as the conditioning, you know, you can do a lot of the same things from wrestling. But the techniques, obviously, you're going to have to condition yourself on the techniques. Like, if you're, you know, a really good wrestler, you might be in awesome wrestling shape, but when you go out there and start throwing punches, you're going to get winded. So you have to mix it up and, you know, work every angle of the game because it changes all the time. You know, people are getting stronger at every point. And, you know, there's not really just one style in MMA anymore. Like it used to be you're either a boxer or you're a jiu-jitsu guy or you're a kickboxer, whatever it was. And now everybody's mixing in so well that you know, you're constantly having to train everything and do conditioning for every angle, you know, so you're ready to go at, you know, whatever the scenario is. So, it's definitely a lot of life, but you can't just train wrestling only, definitely not.
So what's next for you? Do you have a fight lined up?
You know, I haven't signed contracts or I haven't said anything, you know, but I really have it set that after Leonard Garcia and Kevin Aguilar fight in December, I'm hoping I get the winner out of that, and that should be early next year, probably February or March next year, should be fighting for that title, hopefully, and, you know, but nothing's for sure yet, haven't signed anything or, you know, said anything for sure. But as far as, you know, that's what it's looking like right now, so.
All right. Well, good luck with that. Now, is there anything, a shout-out you want to give to any of your sponsors, your camp or anything?
Yeah, definitely. Just Octagon MMA, guys. Check them out on, you know, Facebook, Twitter, whatever it is. Go on octagonmma.com. Check out the gym, man. We got big names coming up. We got Sean Spencer. He's fighting the next week up in Vegas. I'm actually going to be in his corner that weekend at the Ultimate, the Live Ultimate Fighter finale. And so he'll be fighting him. And we got George Papiao. He's fighting December 6th down for Legacy. He's fighting on San Antonio. So, you know, we have big things going on right now at Octagon. And just thank all the guys up there and my coach, Dave Scott, for, you know, just helping me out and getting me to where I'm at. And, you know, Survey Octagon, thank you very much for the help. And everybody out there, all the fans out there, thank you for your support. I really do appreciate it. And, yeah, just check me out on Twitter, too, at Damon the Leech, or hit me up on Facebook also.
All right, that sounds good. I do want to thank you for your time. Good luck, whatever comes your way. And I'll tell you what, you are a name to certainly watch. Watch out for this guy in Legacy. He's going to be a future lightweight champion, mark my words. But you have a good night, sir.
Keep prayers on.
All right. Wants that title shot at Legacy Fighting Championships.
I hope he does well. He sounds like he's working hard and he has his mind right and he wants to, you know, take care of his career as well as his family. It's really nice.
That was an interesting thought. I mean, you think about the longevity of most fighters and to really only have a goal of 3 to 5 years, that's rare.
Yeah, well, you know, Rampage Jackson came out years ago saying, now this is probably 3 years ago at this point, but he was saying when he was 32, he just wanted to hang it up. Now, granted, everything happened after that. but his original goal was he wanted to stop by 35. So if he wants to, he's only 25, Damon. So if he wants to stop by 28, and it kind of makes sense. He doesn't want to be like Mick Foley in Beyond the Mat and have his kids watch, you know, potentially a horrible thing.
Yeah.
You know, get the bejesus knocked out of him. But he sounds happy on kind of like how Mick is. Remember we asked Mick last week, did he want to become the number one in the world? And he's like, no, I'm happy where I am. You know, if we become number two, that's great. And, you know, we have that type of system together where we can make it to number two. But no, I like my family too much. And that sounds like a perfect fit for Damon as well. So good news there, and only the best. Of course, I do want to bring up Ryan Benoit. Did sign Omega. He's going to be at the Ultimate Fighter finals next week.
Yeah, I know. That's great for him. It's a great opportunity for him, especially in a division that is thin with talent right now.
And as exciting as he is.
Yes, and if he can put on a good showing, and look good, even if he loses and looks good, hopefully he'll get a contract to fight again. And, you know, that is a division that could use some more blood and some more fights and certainly some more exciting fighters. So,
yes, and you know what? We had him on just 2 weeks ago, and now he's with UFC.
You're welcome.
It's the Hell in a Cell bump.
That's right. That's right. But, Dan.
Happy to do it.
coming up this Saturday, of course, On Point Wrestling.
The return!
Fight to Survive. They're in a new building. They are at Old Time Wrestling Arena. That's 1041 Glassboro Road in Williamstown, New Jersey, at the Monroe Business Center. Now, that's Building C, Suite 1.
Hey, you know what? The numbers keep lowering. We keep getting better.
Now, the doors open at 6:30 p.m. Bell time is at 7. All tickets are $15, and they are available at the door. Now, the main event. I want your thoughts on this one, Dan. The main event, highly entertaining wrestlers. That's Xavier Cross and Drew Blood, of course, with the Financial Miracle Audi, taking on the best around, and that's TJ Cannon and Bruce Maxwell.
You know what? I'm going to have to give the win to HEW. Drew Blood is on a roll.
Certainly is on his way to Cage of Death, Dan.
Yes, on his way to Cage of Death, Drew. Anyway, and Xavier Cross is just—I still believe that he's one of the most underrated guys on any card. I don't think the fans—and this is not a slight against the fan—I don't think the fans give him enough credit. He's a worker, and I really think. That they're just too much for the best around. I don't know a lot about the best around, but I do know a lot about HEW, and I think they're going to take that one.
Well, the best around, of course, were former CZW tag team champions. Not only that, they were also former TWA, the revived TWA tag team champions. They were the team that Fusion DS started their run with. So,
yes,
there's always connections in independent wrestling.
That's the way it should be.
Now, Dan, we have a junior heavyweight showcase. Oz Tyler, now this kid, he is something else, taking on somebody else. Who is another amazing high flyer? Shane Strickland.
I don't know. I can't pick on that one. Who are you picking?
I am going to go with Shane Strickland. Experience in this case. Now, Shane Strickland doesn't have... a ton of experience. I think he's 4 to 5 years in.
I was going to say, but...
But Oz, he's a rookie. Very well could be the Hell in a Cell Talk Radio Rookie of the Year.
I was going to say, though, but 5 years experience in the CZW is... That's mileage, man.
Certainly
I mean,
is.
The things they do take years off your career, really. That's a tough one. I was going to say Shane for the same reason, but... I could also see Oz pulling that one out.
Very true. I mean, he hasn't gotten a win yet in On Point Wrestling. Maybe frustration. Maybe he'll start bending the rules a little bit. You never know, Dan. You never know what
frustration
will do to a person. First-time encounter. Now, this is the potential show stealer. This is the one that I think people may be going home talking about, and that's, of course, my former charge, Chainsaw Joe Gacy taking on Dirty Daddy Chris Dickinson.
Well, that's another tough one. I think I'm going to have to go with Joe, though. I think Joe's a little meaner.
You don't know much about Chris Dickinson. But,
I don't know. I know about Chris. I haven't seen a lot of it, but I know a lot of it. I've heard it. I'm going to go with Joe just because he's my favorite.
There you go. I of course, am contractually obligated to...
Still?
I guess.
Sure.
Why not?
Sounds good.
We're going to talk about the next match coming up when our guest, the Zebra Prince, Joey Janela, is here. So we're going to skip over that. We're going to see... This is Hugh and Loudy's Revenge. Now, this is Jersey All-Pro Wrestling alumni and New Moon Rising Wrestling star Crazy Ivan taking on Pinky Sanchez.
I think Pinky's... I know Pinky can turn it up when he needs to, but I think Crazy's going to eat him alive. I really think Crazy Ivan's going to eat him alive. And you never know when the stinking bodyguard will get involved or the corrections officer. He's standing there, and the next minute he's up at ringside sticking his nose in there.
Handcuffing people to ropes. I don't know, Dan. It's crazy. Crazy.
Get it?
It is crazy out there. I'm going to have to go with Pinky Sanchez because he is the king of crazy, Dan. He does have that title with Interspecies Wrestling.
I'm going to have to go. I'm still going to go with Crazy on this one.
I believe he defeated Dirty Daddy this weekend. I could be wrong. I don't know. So much happened this weekend, Dan. We have a new Carnage Cup winner, for God's sake.
Oh, my God.
Matt Tremont, of course, winning the Carnage Cup. So congratulations goes out to Matt Tremont.
Yes, please don't hurt us. Congratulations.
That son of a... He won the first round. Basically, he did a frog splash into a pile of crap.
What?
That was piled up in the middle of the ring over top his opponent. And the referee, I guess, just...
Like physical crap or like...
Not poop,
appliances,
Dan.
And stuff.
Appliances.
Okay.
Refrigerators and sinks and such.
You never know.
Glass.
Jesus.
Exactly.
He's out of his mind. You know, you've seen him... He's literally done a DVD through 9 panes of glass. But now, let me just jump on a refrigerator and some household items. No problem. I'll be fine.
I believe there was a 1975 Pinto in the ring. I don't know, Dan. Now, singles action. We have the Machine, Sam Shields, formerly of the Midnight Sensations, taking on the Funky Monkey, Angel Ortiz. You may not know much about Angel Ortiz, but he's an up-and-comer in On Point Wrestling.
Well, I'm going to pick Angel Ortiz.
There you go. Me too. Challenge is accepted. The mysterious Nicholas Kay taking on Rory Mondo. Rory Mondo, of course, on his way to Cage of Death as well. I got to go with Rory because...
I'm going with Rory, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, just this attitude. What's going to stop Rory Mondo on the way to Cage of Death, quite frankly?
A truck loaded with dynamite.
I feel sad. I feel sad for Nicholas Kay. God rest his soul. Hey, here's one for you. Here's one for you, Dan. So Fly, LJ Cruz is taking on the Wild Sicilian, Robbie Marino. Now, that's a little too close to call.
I'm going with LJ Cruz. Hashtag Mr. VIP.
Well, let's not forget at the last show, Dan, Robbie Marino is now Mr. On Point as well.
You know what? I think LJ Cruz has something to prove. I mean, he's another one of those guys that is one of the harder workers at the top of the card, and I think he wants to do something with this. I'm hoping he does.
We have a Lucha Showdown. Latin Dragon taking on Mascara Celestial.
You made that up.
No, I didn't.
Oh.
You haven't seen Mascara Celestial yet?
No, I have not.
You're missing out on something here,
I'm
man.
Sorry. Well, hopefully he's on the next On Point show at the beginning of the year. Wait.
Oh, he will be. I've heard rumblings.
Rumors,
such, if you will.
If you will. I'm going to go with, you know what? I'm going to go with the unknown. I'm going to go with Mascara Celestial.
Now, of course, at the last On Point show, Mascara Celestial defeated Ophidian to get this match with Latin Dragon. So just throwing that out there for you. Shoney, I know the product, if you will.
I'm just saying.
Fantastic Four-Way number four, Dan. We have the number one fighting athlete out there today, Ryan Castellucci.
Yeah.
Taking on Stan Styles. If you haven't seen Stan Styles, well.
You're missing out.
He comes out with a shake weight. That's all I need to say.
Oh.
He's taking on Johnny Miyagi.
Never mind.
And, of course, the Caveman. Now, the Caveman last month made his, well, 2 months ago, made his debut for On Point Wrestling. Interesting. Interesting fella.
Ooh. I'm going to go with Castellucci. Castellucci. He hasn't let me down yet, man.
That's true. He is undefeated. He is undefeated. However, that was in Deptford. Will things change? Move
well,
it
you know, it's sense. Not far to take all those people and have them follow you.
He's like Johnny Appleseed. Just gonna move
come
all
my way.
That's right, playing the flute. So that is the show. And, of course, in just a few moments, we're going to be talking with Joey Janela as he, for some unknown reason, attacked Matt Tremont at the completion of the Tremont-Jaka match. Out came Janela from ringside attacking him, saying he wanted to take down the biggest dog in On Point Wrestling. And right now I'm joined by Harry Barnett, the great Harry Barnett. How are you doing tonight? I know you want to talk a little bit about this On Point show. So, Harry, the floor is yours, sir.
Well, I did hear you talking about the highly entertaining wrestlers, and I thought, you know, you were saying about how underrated Xavier Cross was. I mean, anyone from this side of the world is just great.
Shut up. Sorry,
really?
it's all yours. Go ahead, I'll shut up. For you. Yeah, underrated, like the Beatles were underrated, moron. Keep going.
Dean, are you really going to let him talk to your callers
this
way?
Hey, you can handle it yourself, Harry. You have a show with him. Go ahead. Your thoughts besides Xavier Cross.
Yeah,
I mean, this is a big show coming up for On Point Wrestling here.
Yeah, well, it's the next show being their anniversary after that, isn't it? I mean, it's a big show to lead up to. It's certainly something for someone like me to pay attention to and think, you know what, this is a great show. I want to come all the way back over to America to see. So, you know, I'm looking forward to hearing what's going on. I mean, Matt Tremont against your guests on next. I'm actually going to be listening to that interview because I don't know much about him and I want to learn a bit more, you know. It sounds like a show that people should be going out and seeing.
Oh, certainly. And it's not at the Proving Grounds. Let's make that clear. It is at the Old Time Wrestling Arena. Dan, I'm trying to find the address. There it is.
1041.
Glassboro Road, Williamstown, New Jersey, at the Monroe Business Center.
Suite 1, Building C.
Or Building C, Suite 1.
Yes, that's it.
One or the other.
At least it still begins with a 10.
Is it marked?
I don't know.
Oh, okay. OCW Arena, it sounds awesome.
Hey.
No, I meant... No, seriously.
I agree.
Okay, I wasn't being sarcastic. I was like, OTW Arena has a ring to it. I like that.
Old Time Wrestling, they do double shots, they have shows. I think they're doing a show previous to that. I don't know. They do a show every Saturday.
That's
they're
a
crazy.
Great thing. Like $25-$30, have two wrestling shows on a weekend. You don't have to go anywhere. You go to one place.
Yeah, $25 would pay for both.
That's
if,
awesome.
If you so desire. Now, the door is open at 6:30. The bell time is 7. All tickets are $15 available at the door. Now, Dan.
Yes, sir.
All these shows, and this is Harry too, but all these shows have had one match that kind of stands out. Of course, the last show was the main event, Dickinson against Summers. What do you think is going to be that match that people are going to be going away from saying On Point Wrestling has arrived?
Harry, you first.
I'd say the one with LJ Cruz in.
Really? You're looking forward to LJ Cruz against Robbie Marino?
Really? Well, I'm taken aback by that answer.
That could be the one. You never know, Dan.
Well, I mean, you're looking at these. You're asking to narrow it down to one match. I mean, you got this match. You got HEW and the Best Around. And then you got a match with Matt Tremont. And then you got Crazy Ivan and Pinky. Joke it. How can you pick just one?
How can you? But I'm asking you to do it.
I'm going to go with the four-way.
The Fantastic Four-Way.
I'm going to go with the Fantastic Four-Way because I certainly think that those guys are going to try to do as much as they can to take each other out. I'm going to go with the four-way.
Well, I am going to go with the match that I'm talking about. Now, I think a sleeper match, if you will, is going to be Gacy against Dickinson. But the match that is going to be the most violent, the scariest to watch as an observer is one featuring our next guest, and that is, of course, the Zebra Prince, Joey Janela. We'll have him on right after this. Coming up this Saturday, we already talked about the card. It is the Zebra Prince, Joey Janela. How are you doing tonight, sir?
Hey, man, what's going on?
Oh, not too much tonight. You're also with Dan and Chris, and I wanted to start out with probably the most obvious question. It is, why Matt Tremont? Why did you attack him last month? Why are you obsessed with Matt Tremont?
I got the invite from On Point Wrestling to come and debut last month. Unfortunately, I was injured with a serious concussion, so I had to decline their invitation. But I decided to show up anyway and take out the toughest, the baddest, the most sadistic individual they had, and his name is Matt Tremont.
I mean, aren't you a little worried? I mean, you know what Matt is capable of. You know what he could do to people. I'm not doubting your skills whatsoever. Aren't you a little bit worried that maybe you bit off a little more than you can chew? What are you going to do to this person?
Absolutely not. I'm not scared. This is one of my biggest challenges to date. This man is a world-renowned deathmatch superstar. He's taking on the likes of Necro Butcher, the Brain Damages, the Danny Havocs, the Drake Youngers, and the list goes on and on and on. And, you know, what I'm going to do is I'm going to come to On Point Wrestling on Saturday night in Monroe Township, New Jersey, and I'm going to kick the shit out of Tremont all over that town, all over that building. I'm gonna rip his face off. And I'm going to put it on a stick, and I'm going to show everybody who's the baddest dog in New Jersey, and his name is Joey Janela.
Now, you certainly sound like you have a chip on your shoulder, but what did Matt Tremont ever do to you? You sound like this is personal, perhaps.
He did nothing. This is not personal. It's just business. It's just business, 100%. This indicates what I'm going to be doing in the future of my wrestling career. If I come in to On Point Wrestling, and I take out the baddest man they have, and I make him look like a pile of shit. If he looks like a pile of shit and my hand is raised at the end of the night, who is everyone going to be talking about? They're not going to be talking about the bulldozer match Fremont. They're not going to be talking about his accolades. They're going to be talking about Joey fucking Janela, the zebra kid. They're going to be talking about Joey Janela next week. They're going to be talking about Joey Janela the week after. And Matt Fremont is going to be in a hospital somewhere in Atlantic City, crying, pouting, taking his food through a goddamn tube.
Okay, so it's not personal. This is what I'm picking up.
No.
Tremont's a pile of shit. I get you. But what I'm trying to get at is you had several other ways to start your journey in On Point Wrestling. You could have taken out Ophidian, for example. You could have taken...
Ophidian,
well,
really?
I don't know.
Ophidian?
I'm throwing that one out there for you.
He
Why
scares
not
me.
Ophidian. Snake style. You know.
Scary.
A fucking snake.
Okay,
If I wanted to do that, I would have went to Jakara before they shut down, and I would have jumped out of the front row and beat the shit out of all the cartoon characters and made them look like piles of shit, too. But I'm not. I'm here at On Point, and I'm here to take out not Tremont. I'm not here to take out animals. I'm not here to take out luchadors, whatever they are. I'm here to prove a point.
And that point is taking out the person you feel is the toughest dog in the yard.
One of them.
Well, who else do you have your eye on then? If you get past Tremont, then what's next for you?
There's a dirty daddy I want to see.
Oh.
Oh.
Jesus. Dirty daddy. So
yeah, he thinks he's a bad man too. But I'll shut him right down. I'll shut him right down. I'll send him back to Staten Island in a goddamn fucking casket.
Ten. What you do, Dean, is when you see somebody bigger than you, you take out its legs first, and then you go for the heart.
I see.
I just stab them.
Ouch.
Or you could do it that way, Dan.
I...
So, Joey, let's get back to your career, where this all started from. What have you been doing up until On Point? I know you've done a few shows with the Monster Factory. You've done a few shows here, there, and everywhere. So why is On Point like your destiny at this point?
It's not my destiny. My destiny is to become the baddest motherfucker on the independents. Ain't nobody stopping me. Not Matt Tremont, not anybody on the On Point roster. I've been making my moves, cementing my footsteps in every place I've wrestled. And I've gotten fired from some places I wrestled because, you know, they wanted the unpredictable Joe Janela, but when I came and I delivered, they couldn't take it.
Is that perhaps the Monster Factory we're talking about?
Yeah. No.
I was just I've heard rumors about things not going quite your way. Or their way, should I say, at Monster Factory. You have an open floor if you want to talk about Monster Factory. I don't care. It's up to you.
No, they're not on my list right now to talk about. I got three big shows this weekend, and one of them's against the Bulldozer Matt Tremont. The last thing I have to worry about is the Monster Factory and the 47 superstars they've got signed to the WWE. I can give two fucking shits about the Monster Factory. I can give two shits about all the wrestlers that have done things in sports entertainment, because the Monster Factory, it's our fucking school. I don't care. All that's on my mind is Matt fucking Tremont. And this is nothing against the Monster Factory. It's not fucking personal. That's all that's on my mind. You guys wanted me to come on the show. You guys wanted me to talk about that, and we're going to fucking talk about that. We're not going to talk about the Monster Factory. We're not going to talk about Chikara and their fucking wild safari act. We're going to talk about fucking On Point Wrestling.
Hey,
we're going to talk about Matt Tremont.
Joe, I had a legit question. Can you? And this is a legit question. Can you? One of the things I wanted to know is what was the meaning behind the zebra print?
The zebra kid.
Zebra kid.
Zebra prince. Zebra King, whatever you want to call me.
Yeah.
You know what? There's only one person I pray to, only one God I believe in, and that's the Great Zebra. And when he comes from the underground, when he comes from the underground and rises and tells all the puny humans and all the pieces of slime and garbage wandering the streets that they now belong to the Great Zebra, I'll be the one riding on the Great Zebra, riding through the city streets, telling everyone what to do and what to fucking say and to keep their fucking mouths shut, because I am the Zebra Kid. I am son of the Zebra fucking Great. And I'm just making stuff up, guys. I'm making stuff up. I'm just making stuff up, guys.
We
I don't know what the Zebra Kid's about. I don't know what it's about.
I bought a pair of tights
from Party City that were zebra print because my tights ripped, and I just started calling myself the Zebra Kid. It's so fucking funny.
Well, there you go. You mentioned you have three big shows this week. You also have RTF coming up this week. RTF is a very interesting promotion. They also have punk metal going on along with the wrestling. Care to talk about RTF as well?
RTF is the next, probably one of the next big things right next to On Point Wrestling in the New Jersey independent scene. Their last two shows have been nothing but solid, 100% awesome. I can't say anything bad about them because everything they've done has been fantastic. The crowds have been fantastic. Even though the crowds are not capacity crowds, they're loud, they're into the shows, they're into the storylines, and it's all I can ask for. And anywhere that lets me come out with a case of beers and smoking a cigarette, it's cool under my books.
You have three shows in, was it 2 days? How do you mentally and physically prepare for that many shows in that many days?
I've done it a lot this year. I've done five shows this year in a weekend. The most I've done in a weekend was when I was 17. I did seven. I did eight matches in one weekend, which is pretty ridiculous.
Jeez.
My God.
And that was only when I was 19. I didn't even know how to fucking wrestle back then or do anything. I don't know. I thought I was hot shit, but I really wasn't. But I did seven shows, and I pulled it off somehow. Not seven seven matches.
How long have you been in the business at this point?
7.5 years since I was 16.
Okay, wow. Okay, so you're still relatively young. You're only
24.
Wow. Yeah, maybe you should have stayed with the Monster Factory. They could have got you to the next level.
No, stop it, Dean. Stop.
I'm just fucking with you. Come on, you fuck with us, I'm fucking with you.
Stop it.
But anyway.
No, seriously, you've been in the business 7 years. You're still really, really young. I question this right. What's the best experience you've had from what company? Where have you learned the most from your travels?
Right now, Pro Wrestling Syndicate.
Wow.
Is probably the biggest place I wrestle right now. I'm not going to mention what character I play because they'll probably get mad at me. But I'm a very infamous character for them, and I've wrestled top names over there, and they've treated me like gold, and that's all I can ask for.
Well, you brought up Pro Wrestling Syndicate. I'm not saying who you are there, but what is that like when you go in the locker room? And we talked with Craven Vero about this very the same topic.
Yeah.
But what's it like going into that locker room and you got Vader sitting there in his tidy whiteys changing, and you have Goldust was there a year ago, and you just have all these different people coming through. I mean, that has to be, even though you're in the business 7 years, it still has to be a moment where you go, wow, I'm in the same locker room.
Not really anymore. Some guys, yes. I've been around the business for since I was younger, since I was a kid. So I kind of like when I used to wrestle for NWS when I was a kid, we had a couple names on the shows every weekend. But some of the names they brought in just completely blew my mind, and I was in all, like, the Great Muta's and the Jushin Thunder Ligers and the Bret Harts, and some of these are my idols. I'm doing shows with them. It's been pretty surreal. The crowds have been humongous every time.
Yeah.
It's just a real surreal experience, you know. That I can't ask for anything more right now with my wrestling career, besides maybe a few overseas dates and maybe a Japan tour. But besides that, I'm pretty content right now.
Yeah, that sounds. It's just amazing to me, as an outside observer to PWS. Just each time, there's at least five legends, six legends, and it's like every show.
They're toning it down because their students are just so fucking good. Like Craven Varro is just amazing.
Yeah,
he's only been wrestling for like a year, maybe like 3 months. Maybe a year, maybe a little bit longer, because I know he started training before PWS with Sammy Callahan. But some of the students are just getting such followings and creating an emotional attachment to the fan base that we won't need those five or six or seven or eight names anymore. We're creating stars right now. Pat Buck and Eric are creating stars. Out of new guys who can wrestle better than 75% of the independents right now.
You know what's interesting about that, too? They're doing it very quietly, in a way, as far as their students. Of course, the school opened up, I think it was last April, and it's just been so quiet. And we were talking to Craven again. He said he finally bought merchandise. He had T-shirts available, and he was surprised that he sold out. So it just goes back to what you're saying about they're building stars.
He has quite a following right now. I don't know what it is because maybe because he's not a good wrestler, but there's something about him that fans love, and he's just been killing it, and he's been killing it in merch sales, and you know, that's it, you know. I guess he's living the dream. 1 year into the business, I've been living the dream the whole time, but not like these kids are. Well, guys, some of them are older than me, but I call them kids. I feel like kids in the business, I guess. But, you know, some of these guys, they got the golden opportunity, and Pat and Eric gave them a torch, and they said run with it, and that's all they've been doing is just running with the torch.
When you step back for a minute and you look at PWS, and we'll get back to On Point in a minute, but when you look in kind of from the outside, do you say that this is really one of the major independents right now? This is just like PWG. This is just like the CZWs.
I say top five right now, definitely 100%, because no one's drawing the crowds. PWS is drawing right now. Say what you want to say. They are the loners of the independents. They want to do everything on their own. Some people don't like that, and it is what it is. They're drawing top crowds. They have a fan base that come every month. They sell season tickets that people buy, so they go to every show. I would say they're top five right now, even maybe more, maybe top three, depending who you ask. I would say top three.
Yeah, definitely. I have seen some of those shows. I have been to a few shows, too. And it's always, it has that feel. I mean, I went last December, and Sammy Callahan wrestled Gold. There's literally something for everybody on a PWS show. And it's very family-friendly as well.
And it keeps bringing the people back.
Yeah, that's a big thing. It not only started out with a fan base, it continued to grow on that fan base. So.
Yeah, there's something for everybody on those shows. There's something for the, per se, the smart marks, what everyone calls them. There's the wrestling. There's the characters. There's the comedy. There's the names. There's the storylines. It's just something else, you know. And when some of the names, they come in, they want to work for PWS. It's not like a place, you know, that they don't want. It's not like them just going and doing an indie show, collecting a payday and say, hey, I'm going to go to my hotel room, sleep for 7 hours, jump on a flight, and do the same thing next weekend. They're excited to come to PWS and work. They hear what it's about. They hear the shows are put on, the crowds, and everyone's just on the same page, and they're loving it right now.
Awesome. That's good to hear, because when they started back up, I guess March of 2012 is when they really started back up. You never knew which way it was going to go, but now it's really taken off into, like you said, a top five or a top three. But getting back on point. Oh, go ahead. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
I said I was just kind of the right guy at the right place, you know, at the right time. And, you know, I just, they gave me something and I ran with it. And, you know, and it's worked out. You know, that's, I guess that's what everyone says. You're just going to be in the right place at the right time. And, it's the truth, and that's me for that.
You know what, without giving too much away about your character and everything, when they approached you with that, were you like, oh, this is great, or did you just have that mentality, make the best out of?
At first, I said no. They asked me first out of everybody, and I was like, nah, it's not for me. Because I've done mask characters before. And I just, you know, wasn't into it. And, you know, it just happened. And, I fell in love with the character. I fell in love with the gimmick. I found ways to make it my own. And, you know, everyone could be that character, but, you know, what I've done for that character has just been a lot, in my opinion. I've done a lot for that character. And, you know, it would be over. Even if it wasn't me, It would be over. I feel like it'd be over no matter what, but just the little nuances and the gimmick ideas I come up with just took it to a whole different level.
Yeah, that's really great, because I think some people, like your initial reaction would have been, I don't want to do that, but then you made good with the, you know,
yeah,
you made the best out of a situation.
He's one of the most over characters in independent wrestling right now. ridiculous.
Yeah, I guess you can't really complain with that. But getting back to On Point Wrestling, your debut, it's a big one. Fans are chattering about this match that you're going to have against Tremont. Just your final thoughts discussing Tremont and what this match means to you, not only you, but what it means to On Point Wrestling as well.
Tremont, he's one tough dude. I'm going to go in there and we're going to fight. There's no other way to put it. If you want to see a wrestling match, don't watch this match, because it's going to be a fight. If you want to see a fight, I would come watch this wrestling match, because that's what you're going to get. At Tremont, he's a tough dude, one of the toughest. A lot of people have been telling me, you know, you better watch out, because he is legitimately, I don't know, a bruiser, but everyone knows if you step in the ring with Joey Janela, you know that I'm pretty tough dude myself. So if you want to see a fight, I recommend you come to On Point Wrestling this Saturday.
Sounds good. Now, is there a place that people can follow you if they want to follow your career, whether it's Twitter or social media?
My Facebook. Pretty ridiculous. I'm addicted to the internet. This is legitimate. I'm always on my Facebook. That's Joey Janela. You'll see all types of things on my Facebook, all types of nonsense, ridiculousness, drunk rambles. Where you're gonna see me next? You're gonna mostly see it on my Facebook. You can follow me on Twitter at Janela Baby, JANELA. Baby, you can follow my, if you're smart and you're listening to this podcast, you know what my other Twitter handle is. follow On Point Wrestling. I'm sure if you listen to this podcast, you're a fan, because you guys are always putting over on how great On Point is. Follow Pro Wrestling Syndicate on Twitter, follow them on, like them on Facebook, Ride the Fury Wrestling, follow them on Facebook. That's they're just fantastic. I can't say enough. You can go on YouTube right now and watch their first two shows for free. It's been getting really solid reviews, the first two shows. First two shows I've ever seen a wrestling company have. And anything else. RTF. Just shout out FWF Wrestling. Check those shows out. You'll see me. See guys like me, Bonesaw, the two dudes, Nicky Oceans, JD Smooth. You'll see a lot of Fast Eddie. They have a lot of talented guys. It's kind of like where most of the RTF roster comes from, the Jeff Cannonballs. A bunch of really talented guys. And follow WXWC4 on Twitter. I wrestle for them too.
Bitch. I wanted to ask you about that match you had with the girl up there, Naya. That was an amazing
match. We had a trilogy there. The feud started in November and ended in November, and it was epic. I've never been a part of a storyline like that. That has lasted that long and captivated the crowd and the fans for that long, which is hard to do now in the wrestling business. And she's just fantastic. For her not to be in Japan or doing tours in Japan with the rest of the girls that have been going over there every 3 months or doing tours in Mexico or anything overseas is just, it's just a crime against professional wrestling and women's wrestling, and I hate fucking women's wrestling. And Naya is, like, she can wrestle better than 85% of the dudes on the independents, and I feel like other promotions should give her a chance and don't put her against other girl wrestlers, put her against guy wrestlers, because most likely you're going to be getting one hell of a match because she's fucking great. I can't say enough about her because there's some of my top three matches this year were the three matches with her.
Definitely check out WXWC. What's it like working with Sam very quickly?
Sam was great. Sam was great. I knew him for a while. I talked to him years ago about bringing me in. He never brought me in. And then he brought me in St. Paddy's Day 2 years ago, and I wrestled a quick match. I never heard anything back. And then we reconnected. He hit me up, and he liked what I was doing. And we started off hot. We started with the feud with Naya, and it just evolved and evolved month after month. And for being Samu, the creative freedoms he's given me over the last year to his shows are just phenomenal. And my own stuff, it's just a great place.
Awesome. That's good to hear. Of course, I've never heard a bad word about WXW. Throughout the years, anybody we've had on say great things about the promotion, so that's good to hear.
I don't hate the Monster Factor either. Danny's a cool guy. I guess he doesn't like my reckless style too much. I kind of just go out there and do what I want. Sometimes it's not a good thing, but they're kind of doing good things right now. I know they're bringing in Cabana, and they've been bringing in guys. They're doing the right thing, and I heard they drew more than Dragon Gate last weekend, which is pretty ridiculous.
Yeah, I saw they packed that. I don't know what they're doing, but they're
doing
something.
Yeah,
they
ran the same night as Pro Wrestling Syndicate, which drew close to 900, and Dragon Gate USA, and they beat the attendance of Dragon Gate USA, which is I don't know, that's pretty wild.
When you're running the same weekend in other companies and you're out drawing, that means you're doing something right.
Yeah,
you must be doing something right. There's no hard feelings against them. I'm sure I'll be back sometime. Didn't work out that one time, but I'm content with what I have right now. I'm more than busy. Besides December, for some reason, I only have one show. I have no idea why. And then people try to book me for other shows, new companies, and they're all on the same date as the one show I have. So besides December, which I have one show so far, I'm sure I'll have more, but besides December, this year it's just been crazy. I've been wrestling twice, three, four times a weekend. It's just been wild. Wild ride.
Awesome. Yeah, definitely. And like I said, you're so young, so there's plenty of time for you. But
my body's wearing out. My body's wearing thin, though. Feeling it in the morning.
Yeah, 7 years,
feel like
yeah.
Like taboo.
But like taboo. Joey, I do want to thank you for your time. This has been great. And once
thank
we
you
got,
for being so cool, dude.
Yeah, once
yeah,
we
I
got
hope
past
you,
that
I hope
deeper
you guys
print.
Got a half-good promo interview, and then you got a half-real interview, which I like to do sometimes, you know.
I like
some kayfabe and break some kayfabe and, you know. Oh, and shout out to another podcast. I don't know if you guys listen, The Shining Wizards. I was on their show last night. Check it out.
I was thinking about getting Big Daddy V to cut you off. That's what I was thinking.
Oh, you guys should have. That was all work last night. That was a drunken work, and we've been getting texts all for the past 2 days. I didn't know if you guys were going to be nervous having me on after hearing last what happened.
No, not at all, not at all.
No, Big Daddy V didn't cut me off. Mabel was cool. I just acted like that, and they bought it. Everyone else bought it hook, line, and sinker. So, whatever, I did something right. It was fun.
So there you go. Joey, again. Yeah, no, thank you. You're welcome anytime. We'll probably talk to you again in, next year sometime for another
show.
Yeah,
thank you for putting Viscer on and cut me off. Appreciate it.
We'll
only if
again.
It was King Mo. That would be acceptable. King Mo would be acceptable. Viscera, absolutely not. Even Naked Midian. Naked Midian, if he interrupted me, I would shut my mouth. But Viscera, come on. No, I like King Mabel. But thank you guys for having me on. On Point Wrestling this Saturday, 7 p.m. start time. Watch me and Matt Tremont attempt to kill each other. Thank
That's
you, guys.
Great. And thank you. You have a good night now.
Thanks, guys.
To tell you that On Point Wrestling will be at the OTW Arena, that's 1041 Glassboro Road, Williamstown, New Jersey, at the Monroe Business Center. Dan, it's what building, which building is it?
It is Building C, Suite 1 at 1041.
You almost said 1030 Delcy Drive, didn't
no,
you?
No, I did. I did, damn it.
You were that close.
I know.
Exit 25A, right?
Exit 25A on the 1041 Glassboro Road, Williamstown, New Jersey. It's Monroe Township, Monroe Business Center, Building C, Suite 1. It's the OTW Arena.
You know what? Quite frankly, you can't even say that which match is the main event, whatever. But Joey Janela, wow, that turned around. I think he caught himself going down that road with the Zebra Prince nonsense, and he just said, the hell with it. Here we go.
It was great, though.
But
that was a rabbit hole I didn't think there was any coming out of. So
No, because Dean was...
He's going to be on Dean
was starting to be like, you know what, F this. I'm going to dig a hole, too. And he was like, nah, I'm just happy with you.
Yeah.
You son of a bitch.
What, I threw out, you know?
Not you, him!
Well, everybody. But whatever, but really, I mean, Janela, you got so much... So much going on.
No, I'm glad. You know what? He's seven. 7 years in the business. He's been in it since he was 16. He's only 23, 24, and he has the knowledge that I think most guys would kill for. And he's been all over the place. I mean, three shows in 2 days. That's crazy.
Certainly is, but what else is crazy? The Mystery Men. They're crazy. It's time to play Bill Olson's favorite part of the show.
Sandwich time.
Oh, stop it, Dan. But the Mystery Men, you can find them at lucha-rock.com. Pick up the album for $9, or you can go to lucharock.bandcamp.com. Pick it up for $9, and it is time. I think the blood's going to flow, Dan.
Oh, yes.
Stand tall, germs, we are the mystery men.
And they are singing The Blood Will Flow here on Hell in a Cell Talk Radio, and there's a lot of talk about this week, so Omega, you ready?
I'm ready.
UFC 167 took place at the MGM Grand Arena between 14,856 people, and the gate, my friend, was 5.7 million. Think about that for a second.
A lot of dough.
That's a lot of dough. They made a lot of money. That's not including pay-per-views or anything else thrown in.
My God. I mean, is it merchandising? Do they overprice tickets? What's the...
Well,
they overprice everything.
Yeah, it's UFC in Vegas.
Well,
yeah. But anyway, so a 5.7 million gate. And, of course, I want to throw out the main event for a second right now. Let's talk about the good things, the stories that people should be talking about, but unfortunately has been overshadowed by this main event. I think Donald Cerrone in the preliminaries looked the best he ever has inside the UFC octagon. Omega Squad, I know you're a fan. How did you see it?
I agree. I think Donald came out and looked motivated. He looked focused. He looked strong. He looked prepared. And he really made the best of his opportunity, really dominated Evan Dunham for the first round, and then, you know, managed to get the submission in the second round, even when Evan was on top. And so, you know, you look at him, you say, okay, he looks really good, looks focused. Will we see this continue on? And as he moves up the rankings again, does he have a shot at getting that elusive chance at the lightweight title? Not yet. Needs a few more wins, but certainly on the right track.
Oh, yeah, certainly on the right track. But he did really look good. And before this, there was talk of him dropping weight, doing this, doing that. Do you think it was all kind of like a preemptive strike on his part?
No, I don't think so. I mean, I think he had some stumbles. I mean, he lost to the lightweight champion. Now, he wasn't the lightweight champion at the time, Anthony Pettis. And then, you know, lost to Rafael Dos Anjos just recently. I think it was just a slide. I think he looked at 145 as a potential way to reinvigorate his career, but I think he just wasn't there yet. I just think he just came in and said, look, if I'm going to have an opportunity at the title, I need to make it happen now. He's age 30. He's had several fights. He's really got to make a move now, or else he's probably never going to get it there. So I think this is his time to make that stand, to really get focused, improve his game, and make one more run.
I think the interesting thing is, he said he's on the right track. He did move up from number 10 to number 9 in the lightweight ranking. So, Jim Miller, just because he was inactive, sorry, pal, you're number 10 now.
Yeah. I don't know.
But he is certainly on the right track, and if he comes out like he did this past week, then I really think he could possibly be, because he was within a shot before, of getting that title shot. He was very close.
Yeah, but things have moved around quite a bit since then. I mean, there's a lot of guys up at the top that need their shot. We mean, with TJ Grant and Gilbert Melendez looking for their shot against Anthony Pettis, they're probably in the way of him getting a title shot anytime soon. So I think 2014 really has to be his year where he racks up some quality top 10 wins.
And don't forget, Maynard has that fight coming up against Diaz. So,
yeah.
Who knows what happens after that. Of course, Maynard is now number 5. With a win, he could probably move up a little bit as well. So you just never know what could happen there. Anything else on the preliminaries you wanted to talk about? Wasn't really too much.
No, not really. I'm just trying to scan through.
Will Campuzano did make his, of course, from Legacy Fights, did make his debut. He lost by decision. Sergio Pettis getting the win.
Yeah, sir. I didn't get to see that at all. I thought Rick Story looked really good in his win over Brian Ebersole. He looked pretty strong. Looked, he's got those heavy hands, really out muscled Ebersole the whole way. We talked about how he fell from grace there a little bit ago. That again, talk about another guy getting back on the right track. I think that was a very good win for Rick Story. Talos Latis getting a win over Ed Herman was kind of there. Latis pretty much dominated that whole fight, but it wasn't very exciting.
All right, so we start out the main card. We have Bagutinov. Hey, see?
Ah, there you go with that.
Bagutinov taking on Elliott. And it was kind of a lackluster fight, kind of. Elliott's a strange type of unorthodox fighter. Comes at you from different angles. But they really didn't gel too much. I had it for Bagutinov. How did you see it breaking down?
Yeah, I saw it for Bagutinov. I saw it 29-28. I thought Elliott took the second round. But I thought it was an okay fight. It wasn't anything to write home about. I thought Bagutinov looked really has a lot of potential going in. I mean, we've talked about other guys coming out of the former Soviet republics, like Bagutinov with a Sambo background. These guys are really starting to make a move in MMA, and I think they're really starting to come along. And I don't know if this is the generation that grew up with Fedor or what, but you know, that's something to look out for in 2014 is the potential rise of these former Soviet Union fighters. So, but I thought Bagutinov looked good in the win. He managed to get some good strikes. Elliott tried very hard. It was a very competitive fight, but it was just kind of there. As I said, it was an okay fight.
But it did, the one thing, the positive I drew out of this, because I did a write-up on HIACTalkRadio.com, trying to find the positives with the huge negative of the main event, the positive I found was that 2 years ago, a flyweight fight in the UFC wouldn't have existed. So I try to find the positives.
Well, yeah, I think this is there, as we get more people in to the flyweight division, as it starts to build up, and we just talked about Ryan Benoit, I think that slowly but surely the lighter weight classes are starting to get more respect. Flyweight and bantamweight are still kind of thin. We're hopefully they'll start showing more of these guys on the pay-per-view cards where they belong.
Oh, certainly. Now, the next was a welterweight fight, two unranked individuals. Tyrone Woodley, who I have gone on this show and rallied against, saying he's boring, I hope he brings his pillow and his blanket because he has a long night of laying and praying. He took on Josh Koscheck, of course, the veteran from the original Ultimate Fighter. He knocked out Koscheck in the next week. 4 minutes, 38 seconds in the first round. What did you think of Woodley's? This guy has power. And a hell of a wrestling pedigree to back it up.
With that kind of physique, you got to think he's got power behind him, and he certainly showed it in his last two fights. Credit to Koscheck, he can really take a shot, but
he took a few in there.
He got more than a few during that first round, and you know that he survived as long as he did was impressive. But Woodley does look more impressive as he gets that striking going. If he can put it all together and make the transition from striking to wrestling and back, he can be someone to look out for in the future.
My thing with Woodley is, last time I saw him, and I'll admit this, was in Strikeforce. He would win his fights by laying and praying. He has completely changed. He looks like a different fighter now.
Yeah, he definitely does. I think he's heard the chorus of boos for the boring fights. He knows that that's not going to get him very far. That's not going to get him on a pay-per-view like he was this time. What got him on this pay-per-view was his striking and Josh Koscheck, to be quite honest.
Yeah.
So, you know, he knows that he needs to put on exciting fights to move up the ranks and be off, not be on the preliminary cards all the time. So, credit to him for changing his game and for picking up the striking. He always has the wrestling to fall back on. Very good. We'll see. You know, interestingly, losing to Jake Shields, another wrestler who's laying praying. He may not have as great a wrestling as we were saying now, but we'll see where he goes. I mean, his up and down track in the last several fights leads me to believe he's not necessarily a welterweight prospect right now. Let's see a couple more fights and see where he goes.
What about Koscheck? Where does he go from here?
I think it was, if I heard correctly, he was thinking of retiring.
Well, that's what Dana White said at the post-presser. We have highlights from that. In the highlights, I don't have that part, but it did sound like Dana said he sent a long text that was describing, he wasn't sure, though, if it was a retirement text or not. And, of course, Dana, the night of a fight, he doesn't put too much stock into what people say.
But we've talked about, you know, the original Ultimate Fighter cast, the ones that were some of the ones that have retired, and the ones that are left. You think about Koscheck, you think about Lieben, you think retirement might be good for them. You think about Sanchez after that last fight and the beating he took. Maybe he's one to retire. And Mike Zwick, who's injured again.
Yeah.
You know, these are guys that have had their wars. I think we're quite likely to see all the remaining tough one fighters retire in the next very short time.
Of course, Florian already has. He's transitioned to a great career.
Yes, he has. Nate Quarry retired several years ago.
Yeah, a couple at this point.
He had a couple of commentating gigs. And obviously Forrest Griffin and Stephen Bonner are in the Hall of Fame. So
now the next fight, Rufus Robbie Lawler, solving the Rory McDonald puzzle, winning by split decision. How'd you feel about that? I am so happy for Rufus Robbie.
I'm happy for Robbie. He's continues to look improved, looks some of the best Robbie Lawler we've seen in a long time, if not ever. I'm going against, Rory McDonald, who was, the heir apparent to the GSP crown.
Yeah.
I'm not sure how to really talk about this fight because there was a lot of McDonald appearing to win, appearing to have Lawler at bay, gets him down on the ground and kind of keeps him, lands those quick jabs, those head kicks that Lawler was blocking, but just seemed to have the better of Lawler for a good chunk of this fight, other than round three where Lawler was all Lawler, just jumping on McDonald. I thought this was a very, very close fight. I actually thought McDonald was winning going into round three. So I thought he had two rounds, both rounds one and two. Others saw round one for Lawler, and I can completely understand that. So the split decision does not seem like an outrage to me. But, credit for Lawler, again, looking as good as he ever has. McDonald really just didn't know how to deal with Lawler and his aggressiveness. Think about Lawler just wading in, wasn't afraid of McDonald at all, wasn't intimidated by his ranking. This is a guy who's been around for a long time, has seen a lot of stuff. I don't think McDonald was prepared for that level of experience. I think Lawler just really took a guy out who just didn't have as many fights as him and just really eked out the win by doing what he needed to do.
Now, of course, with this win, he moves up seven spots to number three above Rory McDonald, possibly in line for a title, maybe not. I mean, you have Condit and Hendricks. Hendricks, of course, deserves a rematch. If there's not a rematch, it's just one of those things. There's so much to say, but I wanted to get back to Lawler. I think his resurgence really started with Strikeforce.
I think that's fair. I mean this has not been a sudden thing for Lawler. He's looked very good in his last three fights. Since he moved back to the UFC, as you said, as in Strikeforce, he lost his last fight coming out of Strikeforce. And then he's gone on to beat Josh Koscheck, Bobby Volker, and Rory McDonald at this point, and looked good in all three of those fights. So it's definitely a career resurgence for him. He's not terribly old. He's only 31 years old, so he's not out of the realm of possibility. He's still got some improvement to do. I mean, he doesn't have a lot of runway left, I wouldn't think, but he's definitely looking strong since he's come back to the UFC now. Is he number three strong? I don't necessarily think that's the case. I think that's a bit of an excessive ranking. I know he beat Rory McDonald, who was number three, so that immediately jumps him to number three. I don't know. I'm not sure I believe that so much. But then again, I look at the guys he jumped over to get to number three, and I say Jake Ellenberger. I bet you Lawler could take Ellenberger. Damian Maia probably could take Damian Maia too. So
Martin Campman moves down three spots over this.
That one I'm not quite sure about, but I mean, but there's a very solid block at that 4 to 7 range that seemed very close in skill. Robbie Lawler might very well be the top of them, so I may have just talked myself into number three. But I think there's about four guys that are interchangeable at that level.
Yeah, I could certainly agree with that. Now the next fight, it was two friends, and Chael Sonnen doesn't have too many friends. Rashad Evans, their broadcast colleagues,
the camera's his friend.
Yeah, their broadcast colleagues, their friends on Fox Sports One. But Rashad Evans looked really good against the guy who was coming off a big win.
Yeah, I think Rashad Evans definitely had Chael's number. You know, this is going back to whether or not Chael is an undersized light heavyweight. Of course, it can be argued that Rashad Evans is an undersized light heavyweight. In any case, Evans really was controlling Sonnen. Sonnen was not able to get his wrestling going. And it was just really a matter of time until Evans got Sonnen down and really started laying the shots, and it was just a matter of Herb Dean pulling him off at that point. Evans never really looked in trouble for the entire fight and basically dominated Chael Sonnen.
I think now is a good time to play the highlights of the post-press conference. Now, on this, you'll hear words from GSP, you'll hear words from Chael Sonnen, which kind of alludes to that fact. Then you'll hear words from Dana White, who's never at a loss for words when it comes to controversy. So here's some highlights of the post-fight presser. We'll be back. We'll talk a little bit more about the Sonnen-Evans fight and the main event that kind of overshadows everything, unfortunately.
Did you see George get smashed and hurt in the first round? It's about damage. This is a fight. It's whoever inflicts the most damage. You get hurt, you get wobbled, you get dropped. I'm blown away that George St. Pierre won that fight. And listen, I'm a promoter. He's the biggest pay-per-view star on the planet for me, and I still don't think he won that fight. I want what's fair, and that wasn't fair. I think the Nevada State Athletic Commission is atrocious. I think the governor needs to step in immediately before these guys destroy this sport like they did boxing.
What alternatives are there? And specifically to Nevada.
The alternatives are that the governor needs to step in and fix the incompetence that is happening in the state of Nevada that used to be the best commission in the world. It's absolute 100% incompetence. And it needs to stop. It needs them. I'm scared to come back here and do fights. I'm afraid of this state. You know, and it's not about I guarantee if you did a poll, I mean, not many people think George St. Pierre won that fight. I haven't talked to anybody except Dave Meltzer and the other gentleman here who outside of here thinks that George St. Pierre won that fight.
I thought I won three rounds out of five. I thought the last round was the decisive one, and I left everything I had. Like I left it all in the octagon. People can say whatever they want. It's up to the judges. But I give my best, and my hands up to Johnny Andrus. I get very emotional after a fight. You know, I have so much stress, so much stuff going on in my life. I get very emotional. I'm gonna have a talk with the guys and see what's gonna happen. You know, and I say thank you everyone for the support. You know, the UFC always been there with me, and they always support me. They're the one who made me my lifestyle with my family. I wanna say thank you from the bottom of my heart to them, and I will never turn my back to UFC, never ever. This is my personal life. I cannot speak to you about this. You're a reporter. I know your job is to make things public, but I have a personal life. I keep personal some of my stuff. And the only thing I can say about this fight is I give my best. Like it or hate it, I give everything I had. And I'll say thanks to Johnny for the fight. Thank you for the fan and everybody. I hope they appreciate the show. I give it all. I left everything in here and there.
You know, I had one significant problem, which was I took on a better fighter tonight. And, you know, I got mauled. And when he got in that top position, there, I just couldn't go anywhere. I had the fence on one side. I got a world champion on the other side. And I was trying, but he hit me so hard. And then he did it again and again. And, yeah, I think that I could have some moments with him. I think that I've got some spots where I could be a lot more competitive. But that wasn't one. Once he got on top of me, I just couldn't. We could still be out there. I'd still be down. I just couldn't get up.
I feel great, and I think we should probably do, like, if George takes off for a half a year or a year, Hendricks and I fight for, like, an interim title, and when George comes back, I'll beat him up too. Let's do this.
I've been wanting to fight Vanderlei for 3 years. I was never overly excited to fight Rashad. I did everything I could do to beat him. But, no, I've been wanting to get a hold of Vanderlei for 3 years, and it's a grudge match. And, you know, those don't come along all that often. And when they do, they're exciting and they're fun to be part of. And no, I'm always motivated to fight Vanderlei Silva.
All right, so that was highlights from the post-presser. Now, a lot was said there. Let's start out with Dana White's problem with the Nevada State Athletic Commission. Obviously, he has a problem with the State Athletic Commission and the judges, and he even brought up Mazzagatti, that he doesn't like him as a ref, and there was a lot going on. What do you think? Is it as dire as Dana White is saying, or is this he was just emotional because of what he saw as a robbery? Now, Dana White scored it. He only scored the third round for GSP. He had four rounds for Hendricks, so he was even more upset.
No, it's not that bad. I mean, in the moment, you know, Dana White's an emotional guy. In the moment, yes, it's horrible. That's not to say that Nevada State Athletic Commission is innocent. They certainly had their share of black eyes in the recent past. They've had stuff. You know, as somebody was telling me, I saw some read somewhere, John McCarthy can't ref in Nevada, but Kim Winslow and Steve Mazzagatti can. You know, so depending on what your feelings are about Kim Winslow and Steve Mazzagatti, but this Nevada State Athletic Commission certainly has choices they've made that are questionable. But that, again, what I said at the top of the show, looking at that fight in retrospect, it was a very close first round. It wasn't all that it wasn't all that bad a decision in retrospect. I still believe Hendricks won, but there's it's still a subjective sport in a lot of ways. You know, if Hendricks wanted to ensure that he was going to be the champion, he should have finished the fight.
Next week I'll play a funny part of that post-presser. I was a little slammed for time, so I didn't get this part in, where somebody asked a question to Hendricks that, you know, it looked like you could have went for the finish, something to that effect, in that, I guess it was the fourth round. You could have went for the finish, and he said, well, 70% of my punching was good enough. I was trying to save myself. 70% was good enough. And Dana White says, no, it wasn't. He goes, you lost. He goes, you don't leave it to the judges.
So the belt's in GSP's hands. It's not in yours. It wasn't good enough.
I think Hendricks, obviously very emotional as well, so take this with a grain of salt, too. He was coming off a bit of a prick, too, in this whole thing, to say, no, I know I'm the champ and this and that. A lot of times you see guys kind of hold back and go, you know what, I'll just wait for the rematch. He's just like, oh no, I'm the uncrowned champ, and I know I was better, and I know I won, and it's like you said, some people will look back and go, you know, that first round really was close. So you're coming off like a jerk right now, Hendricks.
There's absolutely no reason not to leave it in the cage every single round.
And kudos, even looking at that main event, kudos to GSP. He came out like he had to win that fifth round.
He did. He knew what he had to do.
So kudos to him.
He knew he needed a round. He knew, you know, I don't know if Firas Sahabi told him it was even after the fourth round, but I mean, he came out thinking like he needed to win, and hopefully Firas told GSP, you need this round. If I'm in my fighter's corner, I'm telling you need this round. Maybe if you don't even need it, I'm telling you need the round anyway.
Oh, sir.
You know, there's a fine line. I mean, there is an argument that it was a 5-round fight, and perhaps Hendricks had to coast a little bit to save the energy for the fifth round. That being said, he didn't come out in the fifth round like he...
He didn't come out urgent. I will say that. If you look back, he lost that round, and it looked like he didn't care if he lost it or not. There was no urgency. There was no sense of urgency in that fifth round from Hendricks.
No, it's my contention you should try to win every round.
Oh, yeah.
Honestly. I know there have been four rounds. There is unquestionably your rounds. There have been one side of being the Anderson Silva type stuff, where it was just so dominating.
Oh, the Maya fight?
Yeah. Where you just know that you've got four rounds, you can coast the fifth round, whatever, fine. You're trying to avoid the big shot that gets you knocked out or avoided submission. I understand that strategy if you know what in there. This was not a fight where you should be coasting. And Hendricks had the choice. He could have been more aggressive. He comes right down to it. Don't leave it in the hands of the judges if you want to ensure your victory.
I certainly agree. But moving on, of course, all eyes are on two. The Ultimate Fighter finale, which is not this week. It will be on the 30th. And Benoit, we interviewed a guy that's going to be on this. This is so cool. But he'll be there, but it's headlined by what? That Maynard and Diaz fight, right?
Yes, and this is their third meeting.
Well, only second official.
Only second official, but, you know, Nate had the win on the Ultimate Fighter, and then, you know, obviously Gray Maynard picked up the fight about 3 years ago at this point, the split decision victory. So this is a rematch. You know, and this is actually a fight that got bumped to the card when they moved the Johnson Benavidez title fight to the UFC on Fox 9 after Pettis got injured. So these guys are getting in the main event based on that promotion. But that's an interesting fight. You know, it's kind of they've kind of been pretty even both ways, and both guys are probably in need of a win to stay relevant in the lightweight division.
Well, is Diaz going to make it to the fight, or is he going to his high school reunion?
He's going to his high school. Yeah, it's all bluster. Jeez. I don't know.
I like how candid you are about
I'm
tired of the Diaz's.
I am sick of the Diaz crap. I really am sick of it. They like money too much to not show up. That's really what it comes down to.
But we'll talk more about that next week. Of course, the Ultimate Fighter finale. Well, next week we'll have plenty of time, too, because that's the best of. So we'll dedicate a little bit of time to MMA as well. Nothing going on this week, so we're just going to preview that next week. Now, Dan, are you ready? We're going to talk some Survivor Series, and it's exciting.
Ooh!
Yes.
I'm so excited.
Yes. Now, the Survivor Series kickoff is going to be a big one.
Uh-oh.
Kofi Kingston taking on The Miz. Who do you got?
Valium. I'm sorry. You know what? I'm going to go for The Miz.
All right.
With the recent...
resurgence of The Miz.
Out of nowhere. I think it's needed to save him on the card. You know what I mean?
Yeah. So you're going with The Miz, Omega?
Sure.
I think, I'm going to go with The Miz as well. I think he needs to reestablish himself, especially if he's doing this heel turn thing. So I'm going to go with The Miz.
I am going with The Miz as well.
Better.
Now let's talk about the Intercontinental title. There was a title change on Monday. Biggie Langston is your new champion. They're going to have a rematch at the pay-per-view. It's Curtis Axel. Who do you guys got? Omega, you first, then Dan.
I don't see a reason why Big E Langston doesn't retain his title immediately.
Same.
I'm just
as much as I don't see a reason why they would give it back to Curtis Axel.
Well, because Axel's title reign's kind of been boring.
Right, that's what I mean.
Yeah, it's really a shame. He comes out, he's a Heyman guy, he gets the Intercontinental title, then I
want to like him so much. I really do, because he's the perfect son, but I can't.
I know.
Same here. We talked about it. It's just I can't get behind it.
I agree. Unfortunately, as much as it pains me. Then we have a traditional Survivor Series elimination tag match, or better known as the bathroom break. It's going to be Natalya, the Bella Twins, the Funkadactyls, and Eve Marie and JoJo taking on AJ Lee, Tamia Snuka, Caitlin, Alicia Fox, Rosa Mendez, Asuka, and Summer Rae. I don't know half of those people.
I
really don't care either. That's going to be an elimination match that's going to... what the hell?
I'll pick the people that aren't on the Totally Divas show.
They all are, aren't they?
No, only half of them.
I have no idea what the hell's going on here.
The team with Natalya, they're on the Totally Divas. Yeah, the other team, they're not on the show.
Oh, is that why they're fighting?
I guess.
I have no idea. Omega,
don't care.
I'm with everyone else. Who the hell cares?
Okay, so...
I despise Total Divas, by the way.
Me too.
I watched a few episodes. It was all right, I guess. Whatever.
Yeah.
If you have nothing better to do.
Right. You know.
I'm sure I can find something better to do.
Yeah, I'm sure.
Well, that's usually the problem. That's why I've only seen a few episodes.
15 Xbox games I still want to play.
Yeah. So we have another traditional Survivor Series elimination tag team match. Now, this should be a little bit more interesting. Cody Rhodes and Goldust, The Usos, and Rey Mysterio.
This one I'm looking forward to.
They're taking on The Shield and the Real Americans.
I'm going to go with Shield and Real Americans.
Interesting. I am as well. I think they need a pick-me-up.
That's one of the reasons I'm picking them is that they need a win. I don't want them to break. Well, Real Americans, I don't care. I don't want the Shield to break up yet, and it's around a year, and I'm sure they're thinking about it.
They're thinking about it, and then what happens to the guys then? I think they're positioning Roman Reigns of everybody to have the breakout.
Really?
Yeah, it seems that way. I'm just saying.
I don't agree with that at all. I don't think either one of them shouldn't be. You know what I'm saying?
I think they should all be positioned well, but it's going to be hard. Three guys. There's not only is there a Jannetty in this, there's a Conquistador in this.
Yeah, unfortunately, I think Seth Rollins would get lost in that shuffle.
Wait a minute, what?
I had a moment, Dan. Anyway,
Jannetty.
Well, there's typically a Jannetty.
I'm sorry. No, I had the moment. You were right, and I was wrong that I didn't follow it. You are correct. I get it. Sorry.
So you had.
Sorry, folks. Yes,
have
I had
Snickers.
I had the moment. Let me go grab my Snickers
and drink a hot dog, a $20 hot dog.
Hey!
Anyway,
you son of a gun.
Anyway, moving on. Yeah, we had enough cursing with Janella. So.
Oh,
yeah.
Hey, you're welcome. By the way,
32. But
30.
Yeah, jeez. He rattled off there for a while. It's going to be fun. I'm going to edit that just to edit it. You know,
I curse like a sailor, but even I was like, oh my, on my vapors.
I don't know what that means. So
the vapors, it was getting hot. I was like, no, it's embarrassing. Oh my God.
I'm getting the vapors.
So Omega, who you agree with the Shield and.
That's really cute.
No, actually, I think I'm picking the other team, the good guys in this one. I mean, I like all these guys except for Swagger.
I'm so glad I don't have to talk MMA with you. You always disagree.
He does.
I'm just kidding.
No, but I've agreed with you up to this point. So, no, I think I'm gonna go with the Rhodes, the Usos, and Mysterio.
So.
Who will be the sole survivor?
Why Mysterio?
Mysterio, I think.
Yeah, to give him a nice little boost.
Yeah.
Hi, how are you? I got you.
I mean, I like Ray Ray, but why? I don't get why. That was very random on Monday.
Yeah, he needs something to do for Survivor Series, so why not throw him? Survivor Series was built on guys that don't make sense together. Like the Berserker would be with Repo Man, and it didn't make any sense, Dan. It's the legacy of this.
No. I don't understand why Ray came out. Like the whole Ray thing itself. I'm like, what?
I don't know.
That's who saved the day? Okay.
Well, I'm moving on. The next match is CM Punk and Daniel Bryan. Daniel Bryan, his title shots, I guess, are over. They're taking on the Wyatt family, and that's Luke and Eric.
I think Wyatt family goes over.
Ugh.
To go over. I think they're going to try to make him go over.
Oh, jeez. You're probably right, and I hate it. Omega.
I liked it. I just...
No, I agree with you. It makes perfect sense.
I think they got to start building Punk back up if they're going to go toward the WrestleMania build. So I'm going to go with Punk and Bryan.
But they're going to figure in a way that people will forget that whenever Royal Rumble happens, and he'll have a good series from Royal Rumble until WrestleMania.
That's possible, completely possible. I'm going to stick with my pick.
There you go.
Sticking to my gun.
I couldn't sway you, sir. Cena is taking on Alberto Del Rio. Dan.
Cena.
Omega.
Cena.
Cena. Randy Orton's taking on the Big Show.
Hate you guys.
Omega.
I really don't know about this one.
I almost did. Shut up.
I really don't know about this one. This one I'm torn on. I'm going to pick Big Show just because.
By DQ, you think he's going to win the title or a schmoz, as they say?
It could completely be a DQ. That's why. Yeah, I'm with you. DQ sounds most likely.
What's next month? What's the show next month? I've lost. It used to be Armageddon years ago.
TLC.
Oh.
TLC closes the year out?
I miss Armageddon. Armageddon, when I thought of December, I thought of Christmas and Armageddon.
The end of the year and Jolly Good Times.
Yes.
The end of the world and Jolly Good Times.
Yes. I don't dig TLC. So that's our picks, I suppose. I'm going to go with Orton clean. But that's Survivor Series on pay-per-view.
And I won't buy it, and who cares?
On Sunday. So I'll tell you, I'm looking forward to that. I'm looking forward to that.
I'm not. Whatever.
You know what? It should be an okay pay-per-view. At least I think the elimination match will be good. I think... The Cena and Del Rio will do their thing. The main event's going to suck. And actually, no, it doesn't look like a good pay-per-view at all. I really think the only thing you can hold on to is the men's traditional Survivor Series match and Punk and Bryan against the Wyatts.
Correct.
I think that's really the only thing you can hang. Because once you get to the main event, you got Cena and Del Rio, who cares? And you got Orton and Big Show. I don't even know why Big Show's still in the main. I like Big Show. I'm one of the few people that like Big Show.
I like Big Show.
But he kind of peaked right around when he fought Merryweather. I guess that was WrestleMania, 24? He kind of peaked there for me as a main eventer.
Yeah.
We're talking 6 years ago at this point, guys. So.
Yeah.
No, you're right.
I think he should be putting guys over. He should be thinking about retiring. I don't want people to retire. Trust me, you need the money. You have houses, cars, whatever. Keep working. But I don't understand why Big Show's in the main event of Survivor Series in 2013.
I don't see the appeal. I don't know.
Although it is notable that he did win the WWE Championship before at Survivor Series against Brock Lesnar.
So do you think?
I don't think WWE remembers that, though. They don't have very short memories.
I was going to say, yeah.
It's not short memories. I think they know, and I think they know their legacy, but they have so many different writers, and they have people that don't appreciate wrestling, writing for the product. And in essence, these people don't care. These are soap opera writers. These are comedy writers, that sort of thing. So they get these people from the entertainment world because, of course, it's WWE for entertainment. So they get these entertainment writers that don't give a crap about the legacy of writing of WWE. And in essence, you lose some of the history with that. Care to comment?
No, I think you're absolutely right. I think they're writing for the now, and they don't really check on things. Like, they don't do heavy research. I think this is a good idea. Well, did it happen before? Probably not. We're good.
Your thoughts, Omega?
I don't think continuity's ever been a strong suit for WWE, but I'm not sure that it's necessarily the writer's fault, given that environment that they live in, especially the creative end.
Oh, the creative end. Could you imagine working at WWE? I mean, they go through so many writers so quickly. Every week on PW Torch Livecast, or whatever it's called, Wade Keller's interviewing another former writer. It's like, how many former writers are there for WWE? He has an endless supply of former writers for WWE, and they all tell the same story, that Vince is a control freak and everything. So, there.
And Vince doesn't give a damn about continuity. Or he doesn't think that anybody else gives a damn about continuity. So.
I think that's what it is. His audience doesn't care about continuity, when I think there's a good majority that kind of would tip the hat to, oh, that's neat, you know? I don't know. Maybe I'm just talking out my...
Well, I think you're right on the money there.
I think wrestling fans like that, though, like continuity, though. I mean, every time a pop, everyone gets a pop for whoever comes out for the Hall of Fame, or Shawn Michaels, or whoever comes out that has been gone for a long time. Gold Dust.
Yeah.
You know? People like continuity. I mean, TV by itself. I mean, there's whole websites dedicated to people who pick apart continuity in regular TV shows. Why wouldn't we pick it apart in wrestling?
I agree.
Right? Exactly.
I agree. One thing I did want to bring up, you said Shawn Michaels, so this kind of got me thinking. They're putting out next year, I think it's in March, right around WrestleMania, they're going to put out all of Shawn Michaels' matches at WrestleMania, including the matches with the Rockers, not just a singles career. So starting with WrestleMania 5 all the way up to WrestleMania 26, I guess it was, all the matches in Shawn Michaels' career at WrestleMania, with the exception of WrestleMania 20, which perhaps may have been the best match. What do you think? Now, of course, WrestleMania 20 was the triple threat. It was Triple H and Chris Benoit, for the World Heavyweight title. So I know we kind of talked about it the other day, Omega. Dan, I'll get your thoughts in a second. But, Omega, you're over it. And at this point, I am too. To break up this set simply because Benoit happened to be part of the match is ridiculous.
I agree. I mean, this is hurting Shawn Michaels' DVD set. I've said this before when we've talked about Benoit. We need to separate Benoit, the person, Benoit, the criminal for against Benoit, the wrestler. And let's acknowledge the history happened. Let's acknowledge that these matches happened, especially for guys like Shawn Michaels, who, through no fault of his own, has one of his best matches eliminated from a set. Didn't happen. It's ridiculous at this point. It's been, what, 6 years now, 7 years?
Something like that.
I mean, I realize it's painful for some people, but...
Get over it.
Exactly what it is. Exactly, Dan.
It's the first match I watched of Benoit's in quite some time. I looked up this match on YouTube, and I was like, you know what, I'm going to watch this because I remember it. For years, I was saying that was the best match in WrestleMania. At this point, I think it's Undertaker and Shawn Michaels. I think that is
really?
Better. Yeah, the first one.
The first one, yeah.
The first one was amazing. Again, every
close,
year.
Man, if you're not on the money.
Every year, I always think that somebody's going to defeat the streak. Started with Orton. Orton was the first one I thought was going to beat it because it made sense at the time. he was a legend killer. This is a legend. Let's do it. They didn't pull the trigger then. So then I'm like, okay, they're going to do it with the old guy. You know, no. So every year I'm fooled. Even this year I was fooled. But it's amazing how they can do that. But no, for years I thought this was his best match. And now you have to have the original WrestleMania DVD that came out in 2004. I don't get it.
Here's my point. It was a terrible thing. Past that, it's a DVD. If you don't want to watch it, don't press OK on the highlight. Skip it. It's like something on channel. If you don't like it, change the channel. But the fact that you are taking this off the DVD because can't they just like put a little fog balloon over top? What do they call those things?
It costs money. It takes time. It's
just put a little thing over top of them.
You don't
it.
Want to pixelate the whole thing.
Oh, I know. I was kidding.
I know you're going off on the deep end there. But
my real point is, it's a DVD. It's listed. Put it on the extras and just don't friggin' watch it.
Hey, maybe that's what they do. Put it on as one of the extras. It still doesn't make sense to me.
I don't understand what's the big deal. I mean, right after the incident, I get it. Take him off. Minimize it. Wait till it cools down. It's cooled down. The kids that were picking up these WrestleMania DVDs, probably some of them aren't even aware of it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and the people who are aware of it are teenagers and adults. They are
like
informed.
You keep bringing it up.
Yeah, they're informed consumers at this point. If they don't want to support Benoit because you want to buy a DVD because it's a match that includes Benoit, fine. But geez, I mean.
Give us the opportunity.
Give us the opportunity. We can make these decisions ourselves.
Dean and I were talking the other day. You jokingly said this, and I'll get to my point. WWE Classics is canceling in February, and you know where this is going.
Yeah.
Dean jokingly said, "I guess they were tired of editing Benoit out of the show." Now it's funny you say that because I'm watching late 96, early 97, and he's one of the main parts of the damn show. So you're editing out Ric Flair, Arn Anderson, Jeff Jarrett, because one dude is a jerk. Almost slipped on that one. It doesn't make any sense 7 years after the terrible, terrible, terrible thing that happened. But it doesn't make sense 7 years after to ignore, like, it happened. The same thing with the Owen Hart thing. I know it's his wife blocking it, but he was an amazing, amazing, amazing wrestler. The fact that there is not a Best of Owen Hart DVD is a goddamn travesty. I mean it that seriously. The fact that there is not a compilation on that man sucks.
Well, blame Martha.
I hate you, Martha.
Why wouldn't she wants to distance herself from wrestling, kind of like the Jackie O.
Okay, fine.
Of wrestling.
Distance yourself from wrestling, but don't. You know, make the rest of us suffer.
You know what? That doesn't bother me as much.
It doesn't bother me as much. But
to me, it's two different things. That's a widow that she knew that Owen wanted to leave, become a fireman, and all that. She knew where his heart was with the family and all that. And she looks back. She looks back at that wrestling thing as something that killed her husband and the person she wanted to spend the rest of her life with. I can understand that. She doesn't want anything to do with wrestling, even to the point of not allowing him in the Hall of Fame. I can understand that.
Right, but him not wanting a DVD and not being in the Hall of Fame doesn't prevent his matches from showing up on somebody else's compilation, correct?
Well, they are in compilations. They're in the,
that's my point. So that's kind of getting back to the whole point. You know, don't put out a Benoit DVD. Don't put him in the Hall of Fame. Absolutely.
There's already a Benoit DVD.
I know, but I'm saying, I know there's already been one.
I picked that up for $4 at the store the other day. I was like, heck, I'll watch it.
Good matches.
It's a great DVD. It
even has some Japan matches on there. It's great.
It's an absolute travesty.
Again. Yeah.
It's a tragedy what happened. Whatever happened, the circumstances, whatever happened to him, for him to make that decision, It sucks. It's terrible. It is terrible. If it happened to your family, the same, you know, all those things that I feel. But it's like you can't ignore what happened in either way. He was there. He was part of this. You can't ignore that. It's so stupid for them to do that.
Somebody I saw this week about this topic. You know, they don't edit out O.J. Simpson out of NFL games.
Yeah.
And he cut somebody's head off.
Yeah.
Okay. Didn't. Yes, he did.
Well, a court of his peers said he didn't, Dan. So let's be very clear on that.
Well, he did try to steal some memorabilia, and that's terrible.
The civil trial said he did. Was convicted of wrongful death, or, well, civilly, however you phrase that legally, he did lose the civil trial for wrongful death. So either way, would the NFL prefer to be associated with those O.J. Simpson anymore? Probably not.
Probably
not. But they're not going to go back and edit NFL games. So why do we go back and edit Raws and stuff? Because of them.
How the hell did they get to that first down?
Well, see, here's the thing, though. Here's the thing. The NFL is not going to show the game where he rushed for 2,000, got the 2,000 yards in the season. They're not going to show that. And they shouldn't, I don't think. But WWE is never going to show the match that he won the world title. And I get that. But there should be the opportunity for people to see that if they want to, instead of digging it up on YouTube or trying to find a copy of
it
someplace else.
There is a series of matches.
And even Randy Orton kind of gets robbed in this because he was the youngest world champion. You're never going to see it.
Oh, that's right.
Yes.
There is a series of matches Booker T and Chris Benoit had in WCW 1998 between Nitro Thunder and Saturday Night. It was a best of seven series. For the frickin' television title, and it was some of the best matches that were put on that year. This is the year of the best match of the year was DDP and Goldberg at Halloween Havoc. And they were putting on the best matches of the night. You'll never see them. Never see them on DVD. You'll never see them again.
And that's a shame. It's a shame. It's kind of like the JFK conspiracy.
We see his brains blow up all the time. That's a good transition, by the way.
But I'll tell you what, we're going to be discussing the JFK conspiracy theories and everything coming up on Friday night.
Will have you.
Yeah, it starts at 9 o'clock on Friday, and we are going to be discussing with two published authors. The first author that we discussed things with was, what was his name, Dr. Lance Moore. And he is the author of Killing JFK, 50 Years, 50 Lives. We have about an hour with him discussing the various lies throughout the years that the U.S. government has given us.
And these guys are certified. They're not dumb. They are not dumb whatsoever. People that have done their research, that are in fields, they're intelligent human beings that have research and have all the evidence to back this up. Very interesting interviews here.
So the first one, that starts at 9 o'clock. I believe Dan and I will be live for that. If not, I will just introduce it, and we'll have that at 9 o'clock. That's the interview with Dr. Lance Moore. Then, at midnight, for HIAC After Midnight, we're going to have an interview with Jack Duffy. Now, Jack Duffy is a lawyer out of Texas. He knows a lot of the guys involved that have written different books on the topic. He's met with these people. But he wrote a book coming from fiction. He wrote the book The Man from 2063. Now, basically, this is a man who goes back in time and tries to stop the JFK assassination. However, besides writing that book of fiction, he has researched thoroughly several of the different conspiracy theories, and he came up with his own theory. Now, strangely enough, these two authors that have nothing to do with each other, have nothing to do in common, have pretty much a very similar theory, and we're not going to go into that right now.
No.
We want you to tune in on Friday for what I feel is a very important discussion on the conspiracy to kill JFK. If that's your thing, if not, then listen to it and say, oh, you guys are filled with poop. Because we're going to be there live after the second interview ends. If you want to call in, if you want to write us before then, have a few questions that you want to discuss, After the first interview, we'll also be on there live so we can answer some questions. So up to you, whatever you want to do, but I really do feel that these are interviews that you should listen to, and if they're wrong, they're wrong, but at least listen to it with an open mind. Dan?
No, dude, you said it perfectly. Why would I even...
But that's all I ask. I think Dr. Lance Moore said it best. He summed it up probably the best way by saying that his book has 50 lies. If you take away 10 of those lies, say these are invalid, there's still 40 more that you have to piece through before you can convince him.
I don't want to say too much, but what I don't understand about the whole thing is there's so many things pointing to the conspiracy that are against the things that are not pointing to conspiracy. It's how, at this point, can you deny it? Even Congress, was it in the 70s?
Yes. The
admitted that there is a possible conspiracy.
All evidence leads to a conspiracy, is how the House... The Commission on Assassinations. It was a special committee set up in 77, 78, and their conclusion was that most likely there was a conspiracy. And they wouldn't go in, obviously, for a multitude of reasoning of why they – or not why, but who they thought was behind it, because, frankly, at the time, those people were still alive.
Right.
they weren't about to, you know, shake things up that far, but
hey,
they did say that there was something fishy that day in Dallas.
Absolutely.
I've been reading so much stuff about JFK.
I watched The Dark Legacy.
What'd you think of that? Let's talk about Dark Legacy. I don't want to go too far into it because this is not that type of show. But what'd you think of that? I mean,
it was a mind F.
Wasn't it? I mean, because once he comes up with the graph, and Dark Legacy, it's another JFK conspiracy.
I'm actually
it's a little too far for me, this conspiracy theory. But
yeah.
You watch it and you go, my God, man, run away. But what got me is when he had that graph, and he's like, this one goes over here and this one goes over here, and he named his boat Martha or something. I was like, what the? No. I got to get out of America. I'm moving to Canada.
Yeah, no, we're moving to Canada. Hockey and monster trucks. I actually had to watch it twice, and it was once at 3 o'clock and once at 4 o'clock in the morning, because I just, am I tired? Am I getting this right? And I'm not going to go into it because I want people to watch it on Netflix for free. Well, I mean for their Netflix thing, but I just like.
You know what? I knew where it was.
How did you make that connection?
I knew it was going that way, and I've heard before Nixon might have been involved in this and that. And then you're like, what? And you're like, the only two people that have no idea where they were in Dallas that day. There were two people involved, possibly, that were in Dallas, but they have no idea. Their stories changed. Nixon and the elder Bush, George H.W. Bush. So it's one of these things that it's just like, my God, I mean, but it's like 6 degrees of Kevin Bacon.
Really,
Kevin Bacon could have been in Dealey Plaza for all
my
I know.
My father was 12, and I think he had something to do with it.
I'm starting to think that way after talking to these people.
Dad, what do you mean you're in high school? I was just in the room when they announced the president was saying, yeah, why don't you tell me? Sit down. We have something to talk about.
They were echoes.
Echoes, you heard echoes.
I wanted you to do that so bad, but...
You heard echoes. Well, what about the other guys? We gotta go get... We're handling that. Now, you are not to talk about this with anybody.
Oh, my goodness. So that is, of course, coming up Friday, starting at 9 o'clock.
Houston?
Yeah, but starting at 9 o'clock and going... We cover a wide variety of topics. We talk about LBJ. We talk about Lee Harvey Oswald, of course. Jack Ruby. Who was this guy?
Past all this, other than Jack Ruby, the one guy I would love to have interviewed was David Ferry. Based on his backstory, yes, unfortunately, he killed himself. Oh, there's somebody knocking on the door. We got to end this quick. Talking too much.
Yeah, but I'll tell you, it's going to be an interesting show. The interview's already done, so I already know what's out there. Listen to it. Like I said, if you disagree, fine, but just listen to it with an open mind.
If you disagree, it's cool, but if you do disagree and you're listening, I really want you to tell us.
That'd be great.
Call in and tell us.
That'd be great. So, like I said, Dr. Lance Moore, Killing JFK, 50 Years, 50 Lies. You can type in JFK 50 Lies and find out more about that book. And, of course, Jack Duffy, you can find out more at jackduffylaw.com. They are our two guests for Friday into Saturday morning. And, of course, Saturday morning, On Point Wrestling will return Saturday night. That's, of course, where is it, Dan? 1041?
Oh, dang it. 1041? I don't have it anymore.
Glassboro something.
No, I have it. Hold on. It is 1041 Glassboro Road in Williamstown, New Jersey. It's Monroe Towns at the Monroe Business Center, building C Suite 1, the OTW Arena. Tickets are $15. Doors are at 6:30. Bell time is at 7:30, advised on the website. 7 o'clock then.
Yes, yes. $15 tickets, of course. So that's coming up on Saturday. Make sure you come out to On Point. I'll be there.
Folks, it's the ticket price. It's $15, and these names are names in independent wrestling. You are not going to – you're going to be hard-pressed to find a better show that day.
I agree. I agree, Dan.
Hard sell.
Well, I was hoping you were going a little bit harder.
That's as hard as I could go.
Oh, so many jokes you left me with there, Michael.
Why? Flaming fire, drinking hot dogs.
Drinking a $20 hot dog.
1980.
That's still one of my favorites, Dan.
And the one that bothered me the most is the 1984 thing. All this other stuff is funny. I was like, I knew it was 1983.
85, Dan.
Was it 85? No, it wasn't.
The first WrestleMania is 1985.
Oh, Star Games 83.
Yes.
Yes, that's what I meant.
Omega, where can the fine people find you?
Find me on Twitter, at Omega Squad.
Dan, how about yourself?
Don't bother.
Come on.
Dan Law 83.
And, of course?
Oh, Obey the Puck. You follow us at Obey Puck Show. Me and the Angry Spatula are live every Monday night at 9.
One of these days you're going to remember to plug your own show, Dan.
I always have to prompt him on that. Now, of course, I am the Dean of Credibility, Double D. You can find me at Folsom County. You can go to the website. And I want to say that we have now a partnership with a very exciting thing, I think. It's called Indie Power Rankings. And every Tuesday they're going to send me the power rankings. And this covers all of independent wrestling. Of course, this week the top two were Michael Elgin, who competes for a variety of promotions, most notably Ring of Honor. Number two is Matt Tremont. So check that out. It's your destination to find the Indie Power Rankings, and that's, of course, at HICTalkRadio.com. You can also like the Twitter – well, follow the Twitter, quite frankly. Like it and follow it.
Like it for awesome.
And that's at HICTalkRadio. Of course, the Facebook, facebook.com/HICTalkRadio. We are also on iTunes and Stitcher. And my goodness, it's been quite a show. Next week, we don't have a guest, but we do have a best of for you. I don't even know what I think we'll just replay Janella, because frankly, that deserves to be on a best of.
Oh no, there's a couple things. There's a couple things we've been talking about, Dean, I'd really like to see air, where actually other people could hear it, not the four that heard it when it was live.
Well, regardless of whether that makes air or not, I don't know, Dan. But
I'm tired of it. That's the greatest thing ever. No, I'm not holding a grudge. It's funny. I'm cool.
Be that as it may, so best of next week, and then on the 4th of December, the boss, DJ Hyde, will join HIC Talk Radio, and we're going to talk about the history of Cage of Death, and we're going to find out what he's doing at Cage of Death. He's the boss. He had to get involved somehow. So he's going to be there. And just listen in next week. We'll have more for you then. But Friday night, we'll be back after midnight. JFK special starts at 9. I figure we'll probably get out by about 2. So should be interesting there indeed. Obey the Puck comes back. That's your first Around the Rink, Dan.
Around the Rink, that's it. I you never got back to me, and I always forgot to ask you. Yes, Around the Rink with Paul Baker from Stadium Journey. By the way, follow Paul. He's usually going back and forth with us while hockey's going on. Follow him at PunkmanRI on Twitter. But we're going to be discussing the season so far, NHL, AHL, and the ECHL specifically, and a couple of other things about arenas, stadiums, all kinds of stuff.
Okay, and also Moose Knuckle Radio makes their return this week as well. And Wednesday is the best of...
Are we still on?
Yeah, we're still on. We're still good. We're still good, Dan. And cool. So I'll tell you what. See you next week. Actually, see you Friday.
See you Friday. Back into the lift.
In my hands, I hold the ashes. In my veins, black stitch runs. In my chest, fire catches. In my way, setting sun. Dark clouds gather round me. To the west, my soul's bound. But I will go on a head train. There's a light yet to be found.
Your performance.